South Side with you, writer and director Richard Tanney. Nerds on Tours, Abraham Levitan, and The Daily Line's Mike Fouché. And now here's your host, a man who has seen Stranger Things, Justin Kaufman.
I've seen Stranger Things. What can I say? I've seen it. Both the Netflix show and Things. Stranger Things. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up on a pretty nice night here in Chicago. Muggy. A little rainy, depending on where you're at. But we're here for you. Got a great show lined up tonight. Richard Tanney is going to join us. He is the writer and director of the new movie, Southside With You, which is the semi-fictionalized story of the first date between Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson, later Michelle Obama. It's a movie that's getting great reviews. It was played well at Sundance, and it will be opening up this weekend. Richard will talk about what it takes to make a, how do you do that? Because the movie shot in Chicago. He's not from here, by the way. He's from New Jersey. But how do you actually make a movie that is set in 1989 in 2016? Now, I know there are period pieces. I know you can do things on lots, but this was shot on location. So how do you make Chicago look like it's 1989? A lot of parts would probably still look like it's 1989. I assume you just have to put, like, you know, a Sean Dunstan jersey on. Maybe like a Mark Grace commercials in the background of the TV they're watching. Yeah. That's really all the reference points for 1989 in Chicago, right? The Cubs went to the playoffs. At one point, Barack Obama's a Sox fan. But maybe there's someone behind him who's like, man, it's Will Clark. He just keeps killing the Cubs. That scene didn't make it into the movie, the first date. I think this might be here. Those Expos are playing well, though. Will they catch us? Hey, Barack, your date's here. So we'll talk with Richard Tanney coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up at 7:30, Mike Fouché will be here from the Daily Line to do his weekly segment, Taxes, Taxes, More Taxes. Today, CPS's board, they approved the CPS budget, which includes a property tax hike, essentially for a $250,000 home, talking about $250 more a year. But that's not all. We got so many more taxes, taxes, taxes coming up. Mike Fouché will break it down to see what we can expect from our lawmakers this fall. Also coming up at 9 o'clock, Abraham Levitan from Nerds on Tour will join us. He comes in once a month to talk about issues in the music industry. The one that's here in Chicago that I just find fascinating is the issue that's happening at the Cook County Board, where they're trying to essentially exclude some of the exemptions, the tax exemptions from some music clubs, music that would have rock music, rap music, DJs, house. Those shows are being argued by the county that they don't fall into the qualifications of what it takes to be exempt. To have a fine art exemption, that they are not fine art. And in doing so, some clubs, like the Empty Bottle and others, would have to pay 6 months back tax, 6 years, I think it is, 6 months, 6 years back tax that they've been getting exemptions on. This would really probably put a lot of businesses out of business, and the county is saying that's fair. And it's become, and all that, you know, put that aside, and you have your political feelings about what that means and what that doesn't. But what I find totally interesting is that they are debating the merits. The argument is, what is fine art? Cook County administrators and lawyers for rock clubs are arguing about defining what fine art is. They're trying to set precedent so that we will now know, once and for all in this society, what fine art means. That's happening in a Cook County hearing room right now. It's fascinating. We'll talk with Abraham about that coming up. And tonight, Matt Klein's back to do a little picnic. We're giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Matt Caesar and Travis Wood. Yeah, Those are good two middle. Like we're getting to the point where we're almost done with this because we still have Arrieta and Rizzo. But this is crunch time, and these guys are playing huge roles down the stretch. Matt Caesar, Travis Wood. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here's The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's get this show started tonight with, of course, the carryout. This is our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Did you hear that? What's that noise? Sounds like rushing water. It seems I have a hole in my wallet and all my money is just rushing away. If the new city tax wasn't enough to get you to contemplate selling your big screen TV, this is not going to help. The CPS board approved more property tax for schools today. This is baked into the CPS budget, which was approved. For someone with a $250,000 house, it's a $245 increase a year. And it's not done. Taxes for emergency services, water, and sewage are on the way. Not to mention a school budget deficit and, my favorite, a committed but not delivered $215 million from the state. When asked when the money might arrive, Mike Madigan, John Cullerton, Bruce Rauner, and Christine Redonia all ran and jumped into the same car and sped off like the Dukes of Hazzard. We live to fight again. We live till November. The White House responded to Senator Kirk's colorful attack on the president for the payment to Iran. Kirk called Obama the drug dealer in chief. The White House said it's an election year and people will say anything to get attention. Kirk responded by throwing his juice box and pounding on the floor. Then he grabbed his nanny's hair. The State Department released emails from Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State. The State Department gave the emails to Judicial Watch, a conservative website. They claim that the emails show a pattern of Clinton doing pay-to-pay politics, giving preferential treatment to those who donated to the Clinton Foundation. Although that evidence really isn't in this group of emails, but that's the claim and they're sticking to it. Because it's election season and lies and truths are all wound up in the same bag of dirty garbage called politics. Don't you love it? The Clinton family says they're going to restrict donations to the foundation if Hillary is elected president. Trump tried to seize the moment by doing what he does best, going off script, which meant questioning Clinton's health and saying that her Hollywood backers, they're just not hot anymore. Once a pageant owner, always a pageant owner. Yesterday, I read the housing market was back up at 2007 levels, but today I read that Chicago and suburban home prices have plunged in July. Ah, conflicting real estate news stories. How I've missed you so. Seriously, who has any idea about real estate when everyone seems to use different data? It's like we want to play checkers, but all that's available is chess. Doesn't work. Leslie Jones, the SNL and Ghostbusters star, had her website and phone hacked today. The hackers put up her personal information and, of course, nude photos from her cell phone. Jones has been in a huge Twitter fight with trolls who have been racist and sexist. A great combination. No word on who claimed responsibility, but I'm guessing it's going to be Dude2011FunTime69. Come on, Internet. You're better than this. A transgendered woman has sued the city to be able to perform nude in clubs. You know what? Conservatives were right. First the bathrooms, now the strip clubs? Not the strip clubs! But wait, there's more. This is essentially a workaround freedom of expression claim to get more nudity on stage in strip clubs. So the transgender part, it's just a way to get this issue back in city council. Equal opportunity exploitation. I guess that's encouraging for equality. Yeah. In weather, rain, then super hot, then more rain, then hot. Oh, August, you sly fox. In sports, the Cubs went in a beautiful Sandeasy, as Jim DeShays called it. Swept the Padres out of their own building. It's 81 wins for the Cubbies. They're getting closer to Golden State Warriors-type dominance here, without all the three-pointers, of course. Also, Chris Bryant didn't homer today, but he's got 33 for the year. That's crazy. No Cub has hit more than 35 since Derek Lee back in 2009. Really? Could have thought Luis Valbuena. I think Valbuena might add 35. Anyway, Rockies third baseman Nolan Arredondo has 34 to lead the NL. And in fantasy baseball news, I traded for Jose Bautista today. Yeah, feeling really good about it. He's got a simulated game tomorrow. Could be off the shelf any day now. On the South Side, not much about baseball, but Guaranteed Rate has bought the naming rights to U.S. Cellular Field. And as of November 1st, it will be Guaranteed Rate Field. Let's try that out, shall we? Really disappointing attendance today at Guaranteed Rate Field. I feel good.
Guaranteed Rate Field is silent after the Sox blow another.
Yeah, okay, it feels good. Rolls off the tongue. Guaranteed Rate, of course, does low mortgages, so maybe they know a little bit about low attendance. Oh. The Bears still have a few notable injuries, including Kyle Long and his bum shoulder. There's a little mystery around this injury, and everyone's tight-lipped about whether or not Long will be ready for week one. Also out, Jeremy Langford. Another guy that's been out since August 1st, Eddie Royal. Really? Eddie Royal, I feel like, caught one ball for 4 yards and then was out for the entire season. So, The Bears play the Chiefs this Saturday and then early next week, cuts. Got to get him from 90 to 53 in 10 days. Eddie Royal. In Blackhawks news, Duncan Keith pulled out of the World Cup of Hockey to rehab his right knee. Keith is Canadian, so great call. Get ready for Blackhawks hockey. And finally tonight, a new planet in the making. NASA says a new planet has been discovered in a neighboring solar system, and one that may even have water. When hearing this news, humans across the globe rejoiced that there are other livable planets and instantly stopped recycling. Then took a shower for like 2 hours. Real hot one, too. That's the carryout for August 24th, 2016. Hey, we got a back-to-school special for all your parents out there. It's vodka. Coming up, we'll get the latest on what happened at the CPS board today. Also, taxes. Starting to get an idea of what the mayor wants to do with water and sewage and the like. It's coming up with Mike Fouché after the news here on 720 WGN. It's a download. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
Justin, what a glorious day for baseball here at Guaranteed Rate Field, and we start the 2017 campaign under a new banner. Very exciting.
See, that's the optimistic way to call that. For me, it'd be like, the results coming in for today's attendance, not great at Guaranteed Rate Field.
It was variable. We locked it in a 30-year. You know, I've often wondered, you know, clearly, these corporations see some sort of value in naming rights,
right.
But when you, for instance, continue to call U.S. Cellular Field the Cell, or the Phone Booth, or some variation
they
of...
They change it up,
You know, the executives are probably cringing every time they hear that because they're like, no, I just wrote a $500,000 check this month for the naming rights.
You just wonder, I mean, if that does when they shorten it or make something cozy, if that's the ish. But at the same time, I mean, they have to call it U.S. Cellular Field on TV, you know, so like if they're like, welcome everybody to...
Yeah, but then idiots like us just go, hey, well, at the Cell tonight.
But are we really moving the needle, Rob? Are we the kind of guys that are like... the Guaranteed Rate guys, we got to take care of Martiri. Keep shortening it.
I'm gonna send an email to Jimmy DeCastro. He's not calling it by the right name.
It's this initial stuff. A little Cool It Now for the coolest guy in town, Mike Fouché.
Man, that theme song is... really starting to wear. Thanks, Beats by Zim. What's it like, 3-4 months now?
It's the end of the summer. We're getting to the dog days of summer here. So,
woof.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio as he is every Wednesday night. Good to see you. How are you?
Great to be here.
All right, so let's talk. I mean, you know, this is next week we're on vacation. You're on vacation as well. So
yes.
We'll get
No, geez. Now everyone knows.
That was a big secret. You were gonna prop up a couple of pillows at work.
You know,
and pretend like it was like a weekend at Bernie's.
Can I do a little
thing?
Aside? When I was in business school in Madison, I had a friend who had a business in Manhattan, right? And he had a 212 cell phone, and he would pretend the entire time we were in Madison that he was still in New York City. So we'd be out somewhere and he'd say some New York stuff.
Hey, buddy.
And we'd be like, yay, hey, Mets, blah, 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 Mets. And here we are in Wisconsin pretending to be, so that he could pretend he was in New York.
So you were looking to do the same thing and I ruined
it.
Right. I ruined it for you. I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Okay, so, you know, but the point I was making is that this is really vacation time for, this is this week and next week for aldermen. They're not around.
sort of. I mean, that's an extreme point. I mean, really, they're sort of sleeping, but there's some big stuff that's starting to go down. I mean, the first is that tomorrow, aldermen are getting briefed on this new water tax. Tomorrow they're getting briefed on this new water tax. And then we're also expecting they're getting briefed on the water tax tomorrow. And then next week, we're expecting that they're going to get briefed on the mayor's crime reform plan. So there's a lot of stuff that's starting to move, and everyone's getting anxious about it.
That it's moving at this time? Is it something the mayor's trying to push through because it's a slow time?
Well, the mayor has said that he wants to get this water tax passed in September in order to pay for the municipal employees' pension. And then the other thing that he said that he wants to pass in September is the Police Reform Act. And he wants to pass the Police Reform Act in September because that's before the budget season starts, because there's a bunch of agencies that are going to be eliminated. And so he wants to make sure that they're all budgeted for appropriately, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
So there is stuff that's moving. But, you know, whether or not there's adequate attention that's being paid to it is a big question mark.
Okay, so let's talk about that water tax.
Yeah.
So the numbers, he's sort of putting out the draft water tax language.
Yeah.
And there's some numbers attached to those, and those numbers were kind of somewhat highly anticipated to see what Chicago residents are going to be on the hook for.
Well, the interesting thing is that the mayor put out a press release about 2 weeks ago that said, well, this is what we think it's going to be, that it was going to be about – it's going to slope up. It's going to ramp up. It's going to start at about $50 more per household, eventually getting to about $250 more per household by 2021.
This is by year?
Yeah, it's going to be ramping up
slowly. I mean $250
yes,
a year
a
more?
Year, yeah. A year. It would be more. I mean, that's assuming that you're consuming the average amount of water per household. You know, businesses are going to be paying more because they consume more water or less. You know, car washes, it's not going to be so good for them, right?
Right.
So they had that release 2 weeks ago, and typically the game is that they give you a high number in the release and then they give you a low number later. Nope, the numbers matched up exactly. So the mayor, it's kind of funny, there's a little less of the shell game now. They're tightening up, which is it's good to see. It's a little different from the previous game. So we're expecting that it's going to be that there's going to be this new tax that everyone's going to pay, and it's going to be about $50 more a year starting next year,
and then ramp up to
and then ramp up to $250 more.
And that's on top of what the CPS budget was approved today, and the property taxes are up
the increased
in there as
property
well.
Tax there, right? And so
another $250 a year.
Well,
on a $250,000 house.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be more. And it depends on a lot of other things, but yeah, essentially yes. So, and then don't forget the property taxes are that the increase that they did last year is also set to ramp up again this year. It'll keep ramping up until 2019. And so then, you know, there's some other stuff that we expect too.
I keep saying it over and over. I mean, I think it's, you know, has to be done for us to be able to afford the city we live in. There are other options, you know, we had Tom Tresser in here and people talking about TIF funds and we're not broke, but when you really talk about this and we do it over and over and we harp on this, I mean, come next year, the year after, and even the year after, you're talking about hundreds of dollars a month.
Yeah.
That are added to your bottom line.
Yeah.
To your expenses.
The average homeowner will probably be paying, you know, thousands of dollars more in taxes than they were in the past, and that's going to be passed on, of course, to people that are renting as well. So everybody's going to be paying a lot more. But now this is a good little segue. There was an interesting poll that was released today by the Illinois Economic Policy Institute, which is a left labor-favoring, union-favoring think tank that said a whole number of really interesting things. Number one, the big surprise is that only 12% of Chicagoans that voted in the last three elections found that Rahm Emanuel is to blame for the fiscal stuff.
We've been hearing a lot of it this week because Sneed announced that Mayor Daley may want to write a book about his tenure, and then it's kind of leaked out again saying, I wonder if Mayor Daley, the Ink column today had the idea, I wonder if he's going to do some pushback on the idea that everyone has blamed other people besides what's happening.
Well, they certainly, I mean, it seems that now this is polling people that have voted in the last three mayoral elections, so high likelihood voters, they blame Daley mostly. And the other thing that was very interesting is that the average voter said that they were willing to pay more for services, and that higher tax is only 15%, which is an anemic number, really, when you're talking about polling. Only 15% found that higher taxes was a big priority, which was a much bigger priority was 35% were interested in crime, solving crime problems, and 34% found their top priority was education.
I'd be fascinated to see if those poll numbers change after the taxes have been implemented. And if you did the same poll in 2 years, I think that'd be a different story, because I am one of the people who are on record year to a year ago, even with the income tax down in Springfield, saying, you know what, let's pay our fair share. If this is going to get us out of this whole tax away.
Right.
I also recognize now as I'm getting the tax bills, I'm like, this is kind of a runaway train in the way that you're talking about $200, $300, $400 more a month for basic services. That's not what I think voters in the state of Illinois were looking for.
Well, you know, I mean, nobody wants to pay more, but I think that there is certainly a message that's getting through to Chicagoans. Now, this was really Chicagoans, not Illinois. There's a message getting through to Chicagoans that there are bills that are due and somebody's got to pay them. And so we're the ones. Now, you know, the question then remains is, all right, well, as you said, there's a series of calculations that people make. You know, people who are able to move out of the city, when they look at their tax bill and they say, geez, I'm paying this much more in taxes, maybe I could just move to the suburbs and have the same deal. Or people, if CPS doesn't continue to improve, people will say, I don't think that it's worth sending my kid to CPS. I could move to, you know, Northbrook or somewhere else.
Well, I mean, and let's take a quick break and get back to the combo, because I have a question about that. You know, is Chicago, and I'll leave it here before we go to the break, is Chicago now on par with their, I mean, it's not as simple as I'm going to move to Bolingbrook because Bolingbrook has taxes.
Yeah.
You know, and without the industry and the things that Chicago has, in some cases, we were talking to Jack Franks about this in McHenry County, it's more.
Right.
If you're in McHenry County, property tax there is through the roof. I mean, it's not even close to what I pay here in the city of Chicago. So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up here. Mike Fouché in studio, Daily Line. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Mike Fouché on the download here from the Daily Line. It's Wednesday. We're talking city politics. One of the big stories that we've been covering, and I think we've done a pretty good job, sufficient coverage of the CPS-CTU contract.
Sufficient.
But I feel like, you know, it's interesting that you and I have been talking on the radio, what, every Wednesday for a year?
A year and a half.
And I would bet that 90% of that conversation has at least referenced or mentioned the relationship between CPS and CTU.
Oh yeah, man.
And it continues, and here we go down to the line, down to the wire, as we get to sort of no man's land here in the end of August. No contract in sight. The CPS budget was approved today.
Surprise.
So they done it.
Right. There was going to be a lot of controversy on that
one. Right.
And you know what's even better is that the day before yesterday, the Civic Federation, this fiscal watchdog group, put out a study of it and said, this thing is terrible. Please reject it, you know, CPS board, which would never happen. And, you know, because they're all appointed by the mayor. And
they make it very clear in the news reporting, too. It's always Emanuel CPS board. Like, I see that all the time. Mayor Emanuel CPS board.
Right. I mean, if you're ever looking for something that mirrors the Politburo, the CPS, the Chicago Board of Education, is pretty darn close. What makes it even more like the Politburo is that today there were pictures that the teachers union were touting at the board meeting that one of the board members actually fell asleep in the middle of the board. So, you know, I mean,
oh no,
you know, this
why
stuff
happens.
Why
would you do that? Why would you? I mean, take a no-do. Get
maybe,
a 6-hour energy,
maybe you've been
energy,
reading
man.
The budget stuff all day and night. I don't know.
Maybe they're up. Yeah, maybe they're burning the midnight oil, getting all the facts and figures straight, or not.
Who knows?
All right. So I'm interested in this because this budget, you know, I think the Civic Federation is usually spot on with their number assessment to reject it. And the big issue in the budget, which I saw, was the approval of credit lines once again.
Yeah,
$1.5 billion. Yeah. I thought we were past. I thought that balancing the budget and being $100 million short here or $200 million short here until the state comes through was it.
No.
What do we need $1.5 million?
Well, part of
$1.5 billion.
Part of it is that there's $1 million $1 billion of short-term credit that they're rolling over from the last year. So this budget, yes, it's balanced if you're just looking at 1 year encapsulated. It is not balanced in terms of taking care of all of the
garbage. Every time we've been on here, in the past year, we're like, well, they just went and they junk status and they borrowed some more and they borrowed some more and they borrowed some more.
Well,
they still borrow, but they still have those.
Those are two different things. There's long-term debt and short-term debt. The long-term debt is very common. Governments have that all the time. They use that to pay for capital. But the short-term debt is much higher interest rate. And it is something that you usually use in order to have cash flow, but not in the case of CPS. And businesses do this too. CPS is not doing that. What they were doing was borrowing so that they could fill their hole. And so they still have that hole that they filled from past years that they're still carrying. And so they have like $1 billion of short-term debt that they're bringing over from last year, and they're asking for another $500 million just in case.
I think we need to get Terry Savage in here. Like, you know, CPS and Terry Savage.
She's not going to make it better, you know. This is what we're talking about, is that the bills are coming due. CPS has been working beyond its means for years and years and years. And so, you know, we're looking at there. Once we manage to right the ship here, we're still going to have to raise taxes more in order to pay all the stuff that we were carrying from past years.
The two things that are delinquent in this budget, one being a negotiation for something with a CTU contract, the idea that they should pay their fair share of whatever it is, $110 million. The other big number is a $215 million number that the state of Illinois has promised the board of it or the CPS,
right,
that they, you know, they've committed to, but the money's not there yet because that's
right.
How Springfield works. But the point being, is that at all?
I mean, those are really two in the same thing. I mean, so the state of Illinois says we'll give you another $250 million if you get some pension reform, and CPS needs some X amount of money today. Claypool said it was $31 million. You know, I think it's much bigger from the teachers. And those are really the same thing. They're negotiating the same thing. The only way you get pension reform is if the teachers get on board.
So essentially they're saying if you win a negotiation,
right,
we'll give you more money.
Right, exactly. If you manage to do – if Donald Trump arrives in town and you get the art of the deal down, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do this because – and this is what we've been talking about week after week after week, which is the teachers don't want to give up anything and – CTU or CPS, the public schools.
Have you noticed anything? And you kind of gave us an insight, you know, when the rhetoric hits the airwaves, when we start to hear CPS or CTU spokespeople talk about the other side, that negotiations aren't going so well. But are there any indications this week of one way or the other that, I mean, is the silence that we've had in the last couple of days, does that necessarily mean that something might be inching along?
Neither group really talks about it. And you know, so the city,
so that could be good.
The city has longtime negotiator, this guy, this attorney Jim Franzik, who leads up the negotiations for them. CTU has Karen Lewis and her team directly leading the negotiations. So you know, they don't talk about it much. Now there's all kinds of other stuff that's kind of going on the sidelines. You know, so CPS passed their budget today, and yesterday CTU put out a report saying that CPS doesn't do a good job of running anything. So, you know, they're all kind of – there's this scraping that's going on the edges.
Well, the next time we talk, it'll be after Labor Day. School will have started. So we will see where we're at because there's going to be a strike notice. It'll be on the day we talk on that Wednesday,
that's right.
8th or whatever that is.
Yeah, we'll be back. That's right.
So we'll talk then.
Wow.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line.
What a cliffhanger.
Daily Line. Dun, 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 dun.
Wow.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new film Southside With You is being released in theaters this weekend. The film takes place in Chicago circa 1989, and it tells the story of Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. From the art gallery to the community center to Obama's junky car to a kiss outside the Baskin-Robbins, it's a charming, somewhat fictional look at the famed first date from the current first family. The film debuted to great reviews at Sundance, and it's now getting released to the world at large. The writer and director is Richard Tanney, and he's my guest tonight at the big table. Richard, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
What about this story grabbed your attention? Because you're the writer and director. I mean, take us back to the first, you know, nuggets of this and why you wanted to turn this into a film.
Well, I think even before it was a movie, it was just in my mind. It was just sort of being struck around 2007, 2008 by the first lady and the president, the way they look at each other, the way they flirt. You know, there's a special connection. There's an authentic kind of love that I think is on display for the entire world to see. And so, yeah, actually, it had to have been 2007, because it was before the idea happened, before they were actually before he was elected. And at some point during that campaign, I read an interview detailing the first date, and there weren't a lot of details, but the contours were there, the locations they went to, and more importantly, the fact that Michelle was not interested in Barack at first, and she gave him one date to win her over, to prove himself. And by the end of the day, by her own admission, after this epic kind of jaunt across Chicago, he had done just that. And I related to that, and I thought maybe some other people would too. It was a good conflict to hang a movie on.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, movies today, they'll, you know, you're looking for conflict. There's, you know, this movie, and I don't want to spoil it for people. There's no car chases. There's no big Hollywood plot points. You know, there's no evil mastermind. It's a date. Mm-hmm. It's a full date where Barack Obama has to woo Michelle Robinson. It is the movie, obviously, it plays that way, but the conflicts are pretty muted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a slice of life in the truest sense, or at least that's what I was attempting to do. And that's for better or for worse. You know, if you're, you know, maybe this summer you've been getting some thrills from Jason Bourne and from you know, the superhero movies that have been out, and maybe it's time to, you know, take a deep breath and watch some people talk. Maybe it's not your thing, but that's what it is. It's just sort of an evolving connection between two people.
For Chicagoans, it's more than talk, though, because what you're trying to do is reconstruct or resurrect 1989 Chicago, and there's some really startling South Side imagery. There's some great shots on the lake. It's really not only a story about Michelle and Barack, but about Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago's definitely another character in the movie.
For you, you're not from here.
Nope.
How difficult was it to recreate a city you don't know is so specific to the South Side of Chicago in a different decade?
Well, yeah, I wrote the script from my father's house in New Jersey 3 years ago, and I'd been to Chicago a couple times, but really one of those peripheral tourist fleeting kind of trips, and you know, in for a couple days, out type of thing, and so geographically, I did the best I could while writing the script. Mm-hmm. But when I got here about a month out from production to prep and to location scout, that was when I really got to know the city. And that was when I went out with my locations team and just, you know, scoured the city for location gems. One location in particular that we always wanted to shoot at, we didn't know if we'd get permission, was Altgeld Gardens, which is the southernmost tip of the city, and it's where the president organized in his mid-20s. And, you know, you just make certain discoveries when you're at these locations that you wouldn't have been able to foresee when you're writing a script from somewhere else.
And to be fair, I mean, that most of that scene takes place in a church, mm-hmm. and you're really just seeing exteriors of Altgeld Gardens. I mean, mm-hmm. that could have easily been shot anywhere. What was it about going to the specific place where Barack Obama community organized?
Well, the interior of the church is actually it's called Quinn Chapel, and it's elsewhere in the South Side. It's not it's not in Altgeld in the gardens. The interior was just so striking of that church, and it was a historical church. Young Obama had spoken there, but not, you know, for different purposes. Martin Luther King Jr. had spoken there, and it was a stop on the Underground Railroad. So there, that that church was imbued with a real sense of history and significance. And I think, you know, I think you kind of feel it when you're in the location and shooting it. But the exterior of the gardens, I don't know that we could have shot that anywhere else, because one of the discoveries that I made was that yellow brick wall in the mm-hmm. movie. For people who haven't seen it, Barack and Michelle walk past a very striking yellow brick wall that's a memoriam to all of the fallen brothers and sisters of that community who have been killed in gun violence. And one of the things I learned about that wall is it's been painted and repainted dozens of times over the years, which means that when young Obama was organizing there, he walked past that wall. So I didn't know that while writing the script. I didn't even know it existed, but I get there and I see it and I'm really moved by it, and I wrote it in.
That's, I mean, that has to be one of the positives being the writer and director, the ability for you to add things after the fact when you get into the places that Michelle Obama, or Michelle Robinson in this case, and Barack Obama actually lived, where they were. It changes the story.
Yeah, yeah. The environment really shaped the scenes.
It's a great movie, Southside with You. It's being released this weekend in theaters. Let's take a quick break. We'll take a break. We're talking here on The Download with Richard Tanney. He's the writer-director of Southside with You, and we will continue that conversation right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My guest is Richard Tanney. He's the writer-director of Southside with You, the date movie of the summer, the date movie of Michelle and Barack Obama. It's released in theaters this weekend. It's really startling that, I mean, for the research of it, I mean, you read the article, you told us about the article, but, you know, they've thrown out in different speeches and different places, I remember when, you know, the first date. I mean, how much research did you have to do to call together a day of Michelle and Barack?
You know, I just read everything I could get my hands on, and I had been, even before I really decided to write the script. I'd been reading all their biographies. I'd read Dreams from My Father. I read Craig Robinson's autobiography, Game of Character, which sort of shed some light onto the Robinson family,
the whole life,
and the upbringing,
right.
You know, and so I was just kind of interested in them even before I set out to write it. There's not a lot of detail about the first date. They talk a lot about it, but it's more anecdotal and sort of a generalized anecdote.
There's more talk of almost like nod to the emotion of it. She didn't like me, or, you know, I finally turned her around. But it's not specific to what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of creative license in the sense that I don't know what they talked about. I don't know what art they looked at. You know, I don't know what they clashed over, if anything. But so that was my job, was to do my homework and then just kind of throw the homework away, actually, and get the characters talking, get Barack at 28 and Michelle at 25 talking, and whatever bubbles up, you know, let it bubble up.
I mean, Chicago is a character in this, and there's some characters around the world, but this is a movie almost solely about them. It's Barack and Michelle. Most of the dialogue, the main dialogue, is them talking to each other or observing each other in different situations. When creating those characters, what do you do first? Do you write the script or do you try to develop the two characters before you even attempt dialogue?
Well, what happens with me a lot is I do as much reading and research as I can, and I watch a lot of videos, and this is for anything that I'm working on, whether it's based on real people or not, because there's always some reality to what you're writing that you're trying to get at. And when I start to feel filled up with information and knowledge about things I didn't know previously, that's when the creative side kicks in. It's like the right brain is sort of filled to the brim, and it starts like bleeding over into the left side of the brain, and they just start talking to each other. Not in any kind of like artsy fartsy way, but lines of dialogue start coming to you, that because you are getting into the mindset mm-hmm. of the characters just by learning about them, and then you form a point of view about them too, and that becomes what you're writing.
Well, what I liked about the movie was, you know, it stopped short of being heavy-handed, sort of having that point where you're like, think I could be president?
Right,
you
know? Right. No, it does not go there.
That's, you know, and you almost, as a viewer, because these are current political figures, you almost are almost waiting for that in a way, because you're like, I know this story and I want to see at what point is he going to nod to things like, I wonder if what's with this Donald Trump guy, like, you know, like it's but that's was that difficult for you as a writer to try and and stop yourself from doing, bringing in wink and nod current events or what have you to these characters?
It wasn't hard because I would never have made that movie, you know. And I'm sure it slips unconsciously into suggestive moments at times or indicators.
It kind of has to, right?
I wonder if people will feel that way 15 years from now, 20 years from now, when he's not in the limelight the way that he is. Maybe it'll just sort of play to newer viewers as just a relationship drama, a romance. So it wasn't hard for me to avoid that stuff because that was the primary reason I wanted to do it was, let me just try to build a credible love story between these two people. And then, you know, everyone has their own individual relationship to the president and the first lady. Everyone has their own individual opinions politically about the administration. So you're coming to the table with that. That's not my concern, but it's an added layer that makes the movie more interesting. My job, though, is just how can I get these actors listening to each other, and how can I what is the most impressionistic way to film them, and you know, can I even just edit this and turn this into a movie that makes sense?
Well, the character, I mean, the acting is something that's just tremendous. Both of the main characters are awesome in this movie. And it's tough because Barack Obama has been parodied. He's been, you know, there's been actors that play him in different roles. Was it difficult to find an actor who could be Barack Obama and not the president that we all know?
It wasn't difficult because we had no time to cast. We had very little money. So we didn't do one of those nationwide searches. We were looking at a very targeted group of actors. And, you know, fantastic actors, but nobody was quite Barack. And then right as the search was sort of exhausted and it was like, okay, make a decision, an agent from London who represented a different actor that we were looking at said, you should be checking out this guy. And that was Parker Sawyers. And, you know, his first audition tape came in and the physical resemblance was uncanny, but he was doing a Saturday Night Live level impersonation, which is exactly what I wasn't looking for. But he was so like him in certain ways, physical ways, that I wanted to see what else was there. So we spoke. I gave him one note. Drop the president. Drop the guy you see on TV every night. Just you're just a guy trying to get a girl, you know, to go have a cup of coffee with you. He absorbed that immediately. The next day, a new tape came in, and he was the guy.
It
was sort of one of those things where I don't. And I said this to his mother last night. If you hadn't met your husband and given birth to him, I don't think the movie would have worked. I think he's uniquely suited to play this part.
And, you know, in Chicago, we know the president as a senator. We know him as a state senator. I mean, myself, I've been in the media for 20, 25 years now, and I've known him more casually, meaning he's behind the scenes. It's not as presidential as everyone knows. And, I mean, it's kind of nail it.
That's, you know? That's good to hear.
I mean, but it is. I mean, it really is. Like, he was a little bit more sleeves rolled up, loosey-goosey, having fun, but at the same time being able to talk to his community as he does in the church. There's just something about him that he was able to do that you don't see as much when he's in the White House.
Right, right. I mean, but as far as leaders go and presidents go, even when he's making the hardest kinds of speeches to make or the hardest kinds of decisions, he always does seem relatively laid back. Not casual, but cool and collected. So you can only imagine how that carries over to when he's not being the commander in chief. And prior to that, you know, he's probably a pretty pretty sanguine guy.
Right, he is. Okay, so the one thing you mentioned just about people bringing in their own thoughts about the president or political or what have you about what they think about Obama. Is that, as a filmmaker and you want to tell us a love story about two characters, is it difficult doing something with someone who's so polarizing where half of the nation may go, I don't want anything to do with this guy. I don't want to see that movie. I don't like Barack Obama.
No, I mean, you know, you do it, and whoever comes to see it comes to see it. I mean, I keep saying this. If I was a smarter person, I might have thought about that. Or am I alienating a segment of the audience? But I never really thought I was making a four-quadrant movie, you know, that would appeal to everybody. I also wasn't making it just for Barack Obama supporters. I just was compelled by their first date and by that love. And so, you know...
I guess it's no different than any actors. I mean, you know, the idea that you would go see a movie because you like an actor or you don't like an actor, that there are different attitudes that play out when people choose the entertainment they have.
Right. And look, the characters in real life are arguably bigger, you know, movie stars or icons than some of the actors that bring people into theaters. So, you know, even if there is a segment that's turned off, there's so many more that would potentially be intrigued by a Barack and Michelle movie. I wasn't even thinking about any of that, though. You only start to think about those things after people are watching it and have opinions about it and audiences are seeing it, and then the distributors are figuring out what the campaign is going to be like to get it out there and when's the right time. I just went into this as I really wanted to tell the story. I felt I had something to contribute to that story. And then every single day, you know, we had a 17-day shoot, 15 days of principal photography, 2 days of pickups.
Oh,
man. And so you're just every day you're just waking up and trying to tie your shoelaces, trying to get the shot, trying to work with the actors. And then you're in the editing room and you're like, well, this sucks. This is bad. Like, this is my first viewing of the assembly cut was probably the most depressing day of my life. And I think, and I've heard that from other filmmakers before. So then you're just trying to whip this thing into shape, and you're not thinking about how Republicans are going to take it or CNN.
Newt Gingrich is going to
like
this right now.
I know how what he's going to think of it. Yeah.
My guest tonight at the big table, writer and director Richard Tanney. His film Southside With You takes a look at that. I guess a somewhat fictional first date movie of Michelle and Barack Obama. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back and we'll have more with Richard Tanney. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, in studio with me at the big table, writer and director Richard Tanney. His film Southside With You is released this weekend in theaters, the story of Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. And it did well at Sundance. I mean, this was a movie that even before it screened, people were intrigued. You know, I mean, there is something about making a film and fictionalizing a film about the current political figures of our time. It seems to be done more and more and more in current time, and it never was done before. So there, you know, I was thinking back to, I was talking with Pete about movies that come out when the president is still president.
Mm-hmm.
It's about them. And I guess Primary Colors would be one, and then Oliver Stone's movie, W. What's the feel behind putting this out while the president is still in office?
Well, there was a movie that came out during JFK's his first and only term, called PT-190, I think. And it was actually about his time in the Navy.
Okay.
And that was actually considered, you know, more of a sort of hagiography or propaganda type of thing, because it was just it wasn't true. Like, a lot, it turned him into a kind of hero that perhaps he wasn't. Whereas, you know, it's not that he wasn't heroic, but I think it propped him up in a way that was uncomfortable for a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, W, I actually really like W. It's a different kind of movie. It is a sort of sweeping biopic about Bush's life. It's also a satire. Primary Colors is also a satire.
Yeah, right.
And it's not, I mean, it is very obviously about the Clintons.
But the
names are changed and all that stuff. And I actually like that movie a lot, too. I think it's very underrated. I'm trying to think if there are any other examples. There's obviously Young Mr. Lincoln, which didn't come out during Lincoln.
Right after
Lincoln. But it's a great movie with Henry Fonda and directed by John Ford. And that maybe sets the precedent for president movies.
I like this concept because it is a movie about, like you said, arguably characters that are bigger than movie stars, and it's fictional. It's a date movie. It's not about politics.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of go out of your way to even to protect the movie in that way. You don't have scenes where you're like, we really got to help the community. Oh yeah, I hope, you know, we can be a leader for the new state. There's not, that's just not part of it. Was it tough for you to keep the politics out of a movie about Barack and Michelle Obama?
Not at all actually because I wasn't trying to make a political statement, number one. And I wasn't weaving in the politics of Barack Obama's presidency. I was just focused on their life experiences.
1989, right?
Yeah, up until 1989. And I banned myself from looking at anything after 89. So, you know, if I was reading something and it started talking about, and then in 1991 when they got out, I don't want to read about it. I even for a while I was writing it, stopped watching the news and didn't want that getting into my system. So I sort of just felt that if I can stay grounded, and if they could be saying believable things and making believable decisions and meeting believable people, you know, you get to the community organizing scene and they're not dealing with the issues of Chicago. Well, a lot of the issues are still going on there, but they're not dealing with the issues of our country right now, per se. They're dealing with very specific things that are happening in their community. In the case of this movie, I had it so that they're trying to build a community center. So just looking at that and going, how would a young Obama respond in a pragmatic way to people feeling defeated about not having that building, about not being given the funding for that building, about being rejected? How would he talk them up? What solutions would he offer?
What I love about your movie too is that that's not even the focus of the movie.
Right.
It's not this is not a movie about how young Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson try to build a community center.
No, actually he takes her to the meeting,
right,
and it's actually part of it's seduction though.
Right.
In part he's trying to impress her.
Right, which she calls out, which is great.
Which she calls him out.
Okay, so another part, we talked about this earlier, just about Chicago, 1989. You're not from here and being able to get that right. How difficult is it as a filmmaker to capture the spirit of a time and place when the city has moved on, when things have modernized, when you can't really do a 1989 shot of a block because, you know, now there's all these condos and other things? Is it difficult to find a Chicago 1989?
You know, it's not difficult because there's a lot of areas that haven't been gentrified and that kind of feel stuck in time. So you can find a lot of those, but what's difficult is then finding a place that then suits the needs of filming as well. So, you know, we got really lucky in the sense of, the Art Institute was just too modernized and there were too many conditions to shoot there. They were very helpful and it's a wonderful place. But we got lucky with the Cultural Center, which is sort of a timeless location. And so we built our own museum exhibit in the Cultural Center.
Now, I read that you weren't able to get Michelle Obama's home.
No.
But you found a home near it.
Yeah.
In the same kind of style, the bungalow style of Chicago. So, I mean, you're right in the sense that it is timeless in some ways.
I mean, with the exception of a few cars lining that street, which were post 90s, right? Actually, many of them were, but some of them were hidden in the driveway and they weren't in our frame. With the exception of a few that had to be moved off the street, there are sections of South Shore that just have the antiquated look that we needed. There's a plaque in Hyde Park where outside of the mini mall where they had their first kiss on the curb, and it's now a Subway. It was a Baskin-Robbins. But, you know, a few blocks down, I think it's Kimbark or Kimball Plaza is where we shot the kiss and the ice cream scene. And that it's pretty much untouched except for some bike racks that we had to unscrew and got permission to move.
It's so great you're talking about this. Go ahead.
And we had to turn a Harold's Chicken Shack into a Baskin-Robbins, but they let us do it. So
I love all the work that has to go into little things, like making sure like cars with models that are past 19 are off the street, or unscrewing bike racks because being a filmmaker, it's not just sort of like, this shot looks good, let's do it.
No, and then, of course, you know, you have people telling you, oh, well, you could just frame the bike rack out, or you could, you know, no one's going to see it or know that it's too new. And it's like, I get what you're saying, but it actually compromises the integrity of the scene, you know, whether it pokes out, it's in the wrong place, it blocks our camera movement, so... You do have to keep track of all those little details, and you do have to fight for them.
Details are a big part of making an independent film. For you to be able to put this together, you have to have an amazing crew around you, but also an attention to detail, because time is tight, money's tight. to be able to do this in a specific way that you want to do it. Is that a challenge for a filmmaker with limited resources?
It's a big challenge, but I was lucky because I had a crew that really stepped up to the plate. I had key department heads like my cinematographer, production designer. They came in from out of state along with me. But we had a 98% Chicago-based crew.
And so they knew how to get around.
They knew how to get around. They knew the ropes. My first AD was a guy named Andy Spellman, who works on Chicago Med, and he does the aerial units on all the big movies that come into town. And I mean, he just runs a tight ship, and we were able to make our days and meet our schedule and stay on budget largely because of people like him.
Well, we hear Chicago, you know, becoming a better place for filmmakers to be able to shoot just in, you know, the last decade with all the positive things that have happened with CineSpace and on. Do you feel, as an outside director who came in and shot here in Chicago, that this is a place that was good for you and also a place that you would come back to?
Oh, yeah. They were great to us. I mean, we actually couldn't have done it without the help of the city, the unions, and the communities themselves. I mean, people opened up their homes to us to have lunch, to use the bathroom, to hang out. You know, the actors got, you know, we were invited into people's homes, and the community would come out and cheer us on. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Barack. You know, and just be excited and give their time and their spaces over to us. So that's the first thing, and then I would absolutely shoot here again. I mean, the tax rebates that we got were incredible and allowed us to make our budget. And it's really a film-friendly city because as more mostly television productions, but a lot of independent film too, as more television productions are ramping up here, a new generation of crew men and women are being trained every single day. And
that's important, yeah.
Really important because there could be a state or a city that offers good rebates or incentives, but if you don't have the local crew there to then support the filmmakers coming in from Los Angeles or other places, it's not really a place you're going to be able to shoot, and Chicago has that in spades.
Last question. This is a love story. Did you nail it?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you're a filmmaker. You wanted to capture a relationship, a love scene. It obviously was important to you that you started in 2007. You were intrigued by this love story. Do you feel like at the end of the day, the emotion comes through that we see that love?
You know, I don't think I'm qualified to say because.
But for you personally, I know what I feel.
Yeah.
And I know what everyone watching, but for you as the director, I mean, do you feel like.
You know, I've seen it so many times now, and of course, I edited the thing to death with my editor, that I just see the flaws now, you know, and I just see what I want to do better next time. But I do see how people are reacting, and that tells me that they're seeing the chemistry between the two actors. They are believing the two actors as these two real people, and they're kind of falling in love vicariously. Mm-hmm. And it reminds a lot of people about falling in love themselves for the first time, or it sort of, you know, makes people feel aspirational about what kind of relationship they're after.
Absolutely. Southside with You is the new movie. It's being released in theaters this weekend. It's a story of Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. The writer and director is Richard Tanney, who's my guest tonight at the big table. Richard, thanks for talking.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Good stuff there with Richard Tanney here on The Download, 720 WGN Radio. Coming up, Abraham Levitan's going to talk what constitutes fine art. There's an argument happening at the Cook County hearing room where an administrator is trying to apply a tax to different clubs and stages and places in town like that do rock and rap and DJ work, things of that nature, essentially saying that they cannot be exempt as they have been for the last couple of years. And it's devolved into essentially almost like a miracle on 34th Street. Like, you know, there's just this argument about what is fine art. This meaningless hearing about tax exemption has turned into a huge thing about the future of how we categorize art. Because right now they're saying the county is arguing that it's, you know, chamber music, classical music, opera, things of that nature. And they're saying that if you're a rock club or DJ, you know, you do house music or rap, that that's not, you shouldn't get tax exempt. You're trying to be famous. So if it's old and it's white, you can get a tax exemption. That's essentially it. But Abraham Levitan's got some thoughts. We'll talk to him coming up at 9 o'clock. Also tonight, Picnic 2016 nicknames for all of the Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Travis Wood, Matt Caesar. Matt Klein will be here, 312-981-7200. We'll do that at 10 o'clock. Today I had the good fortune, bad fortune, to be a part of a memorial that was at Second City for Judy Fabjans, who was a founding member of GAYCO, an LGBTQ sketch comedy group, famous one here in town. Judy died of cancer after... And they said in the thing, it's not really, you're not supposed to say that, you know, you died from a battle, you know, or lost her battle, that kind of thing. But she was diagnosed with breast cancer 8 years ago. And it was strange because I've known Judy for a long time. I knew her from Second City from 20 years ago. And she was a wonderful person, a great teacher. She said this world would be a better place if everybody took one improv class. It's so true. And she was a tremendous asset to this town, and she was a booster for it. And so many students came through Second City and studied with her and had her as their first teacher and made the decision whether or not they're going to continue with comedy because of the way that Judy treated them. She was generous. She was kind. And she really was. I know it's kind of a strain or a cliche, but Judy fell in the footsteps of some of the people at Second City that were much more emotional. They were the types of people where, you know, you want to support the people that are on stage, you know, make the people around you better. This is all about love. This is all about support. This is all about us being together on stage. And she was a real proponent of that. And she created GAYCO, and she was a teacher at Second City. She was diagnosed with breast cancer, like I said, 8 years ago. And it was really hard because, you know, with the advent of social media, you know, she would have announcements that would say, you know, just got the all clear, you know, after going through therapy, chemotherapy. Then a couple months later saying, hey, I got bad news. It's returned, you know, and then she would fight it. And it just became this, you almost, you know, in a strange world that we live in now, you followed it on social media, you know, and everyone would sort of, you know, put emojis up or thinking of you. But it became this thing where for 8 years you would watch this woman that you knew and loved just fight this cancer that just kept coming back. And that was really sad because, you know, it's cliche to say of all the, you know, the people in this world, Judy did such a tremendous job of reaching out and making, you know, making the stage and the world around her a comfortable place for people who may have, you know, she taught at schools for kids with special needs, or she was better as part of GAYCO, the company. That was a big part of what she did. She wanted to sort of set a stage and said, this is an important art form and it's important for everybody. Not just for the white dudes that are up on stage that are just always, you know, get their chance to go through the improv scene the whole bit. And so it just was really hard to watch. But at the same time, you know, it was 8 years. And for Judy, she fought it. She had a 9-year-old daughter. But she fought it. And you watched her do it on social media. She and her family's great and the support. And you just, you know... She lived her life, even though she was given this tremendous, you know, terrible situation, that this cancer that just wouldn't die. So I went to Second City today, and if you've ever been to Second City for a memorial, they're really great. They do such great work, and you know, Judy was such a big part of that. There, it's not a funeral. You get up there, you tell stories. A lot of the actors will come up on stage. It's a real community. And you look around and you see all the people there and you're like, there'll be 350, 400 people that are in the room, standing room only, to celebrate the life of a comedian. And it's really, it reminds you of like how special it is to be a part of something, especially a part of a community. And regardless if that's comedy or theater or bridge club or, you know, like tool club. You know, you go, everyone goes and works on tools. I don't know. It just, there's something about that. And, you know, Judy was a big part of the Chicago comedy community. And she'll be missed. I mean, she, it's tremendous. I did a show with her in 2008, right before she was diagnosed. You know, like we were on stage at the old Lakeshore Theater, which is now the Laugh Factory. We did a show right before the election. It was like a Schadenfreude-Gayko combination. And the one thing that I loved about Judy is, she was so good. And she was, you know, we were there. And there was this part where we wanted to do a show where the two groups came together. And we wanted to do an intro number, right? Something where we kind of sang. I forgot what it was. Andy was sort of in the middle of it. And Andy Eninger. And there was a dance number around it because that's sort of what the Gayko group would do, like a lot of big opening numbers like Second City. But Schadenfreude, we're just grungy comedians who are like, I'm not going to really do dance steps. And so we're in this little rehearsal room and we'd be, you know, practicing dance steps, like almost like show tune dance steps. And I remember looking over at Judy and just being like, I don't know if I can do this. And she gave me a smile and she recognized that, you know, that I was not really into it. And there was just something about the idea that that was okay, that I wasn't. She didn't have to stop and be like, hey, Justin, you know, if you could pick, come on, man. You know, it was just more like, it was okay. It was okay. And, you know, I half-assed it, even on the stage. There's some great pictures that I feel terrible about. Like, there's a great picture of me just kind of being in the wrong spot in this move. And then there's a, you know, everyone kind of makes fun of me. And I'm like, yeah, I should have taken it seriously. But Judy was a fun partner, you know, to be on stage with. She's really funny and a great person and great member of this community, and she will be missed, Judy Fabchance. The memorial was today, and see you on the other side. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Abraham Levitan and, of course, Matt Klein with Picnic. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio now, Abraham Levitan. Good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Yellow, Justin.
Abraham, of course, the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that really takes, it's an interview podcast that focuses on the music industry. You can find it on iTunes. It's put out, I would say, what, once every couple weeks?
Except during summer when I haven't done anything. But here I am.
You should do reruns.
Yes. Yes. You know, please enjoy all the reruns of Nerds on Tour this summer. All the classic episodes.
All the classic episodes.
Catch up.
Also, he does the piano lessons, the power. Was it the piano power?
Piano power.
I love this.
You got it.
Yeah.
We are signing up new students now. We are fully staffed, I would like to say.
Is the idea that you could teach piano by teaching the kids the songs they want to play.
Correct. Yes.
Teaching. I just went through, my son just did piano lessons and it was stuff he did not want to play.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah.
I have cases that I have to solve every day where I am taking in the poor, poor people that have had to play things they don't want to play and turning this around. It's kind of like a self-help boot camp or something when I'm on the phone with people.
Abraham is with us once a month to talk about issues in music, mostly music industry. And the one that we've been sort of talking about the most today has been this concept that at Cook County, has an administrator who wants to roll back or take some parts of the art community out of the exempt tax. Essentially, right now, if you are a club, you know, a theater, other places, you can get tax exempt status or performance tax exempt status for it because you don't make a lot of money. There's someone arguing that's being abused, that there's rock clubs, DJs, rap clubs. Those are not considered quote unquote fine art, and they need to get on the back tax trail.
Yes,
and,
right.
Which is years and years of back tax, and that could actually take a lot of these clubs out of commission, like, and get them out of business.
Yeah, the county is going after these clubs that operate on razor-thin margins, as we all do in the music industry, and now saying we are trying to collect 6 years of back taxes because you have been putting on art that is not fine.
Now, what I think is really interesting about it is that the lawyers that are representing the other side have been very smart to make this a bigger issue about what is and what is not fine art. Essentially, what's happening in a committee hearing you know, conference room and in the county building is essentially defining what we consider fine art for the remainder of human time.
Yes, and I think this case is only going to get more ridiculous. I have a good friend who's listening right now in New York City who is a musicologist, and he will be delighted to know that a musicologist will be called in to testify on behalf of these rock clubs that rock and hip-hop and DJ music are indeed fine art. And therefore, the club should not have to
pay
the tax.
What is the argument from the county? The argument is that these are money-making entities, that they shouldn't be involved in what is considered the fine art tax exemption?
Well, the argument from the county starts with the fact that the county is broke and looking for any possible way to get an extra dime at this point, and I don't blame them. But secondly, yes, that rock and hip-hop and DJ music are somehow in a pop music category as opposed to, you know, symphony orchestras and jazz quartets, operas. Right. And I think the assumption is that if it has the word pop attached, it is therefore popular and therefore highly profitable for all involved. And anyone who's done time in the trenches of the music industry knows that if you're playing these small clubs, which is what we're talking about, clubs under 750 capacity, you are far from generating a king's ransom with your song and dance routine.
Let's take it back. I'll play in this argument because I'm actually intrigued by how this plays out, but I'll play the county's side for this.
Great.
At some point or another, it became that this tax exemption under whoever it was doing, it was a fine art tax exemption. At one point or another, they opened it up or allowed, I should say, someone probably allowed a rock club to get in. And now you're seeing so many different, because of precedent, rock clubs and rap houses, please, people like that, that are just doing it to get the tax exemption, not because they fit the mold, and the mold being that this is an art form that's for enriching the public in the space that we live. They're doing it to save money because they are trying to be profitable.
I'd say any club that takes advantage of it is doing it to save money and to be more profitable. Now, I'm not a lawyer, although I play one on WGN radio tonight.
Dun, 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 dun. Abraham Levitan, lawyer, tonight.
I do want to say that precedent is a big part of the law.
Right.
And
right.
It eventually turns into the law. That's why literally now means figuratively. Same thing with definitions. And you have a sense now where if rock clubs have been doing this for so long, they've been budgeting, planning on continuing their current tax status. I mean, it's brutal. It's a brutal business. And the idea of throwing a major curveball, I mean, it's bad enough that they're trying to collect going forward. But when I read this article again saw they're trying to get 6 years of back taxes, I mean, as you say, it could be a death sentence for a lot of small clubs in Chicago.
I want to hear what you think. 312-981-7200. If you're out there and you have an argument one way or the other, and you can articulate it and help us understand, because I guess I get the point. The fine art circus that's going on there about what is fine art and what it's not seems to be just ludicrous. But the idea that somewhere along the line they want to change tax exemption, that's their right as the county. I mean, they can make a choice, and they could be making that choice to say clubs like, I don't know, the Empty Bottle, clubs like, Talia Hall, or clubs like Lincoln Hall even, fit into this category. And you know what? You make young people coming in there. You're a business. You chose this business. You shouldn't get a freebie or a tax exemption from the county.
Yeah. Now let's broaden this argument out, though, because let's say you're the county and your goal is to make money off of Chicago music. Okay. So instead of punishing the people who are currently practicing this art form, I would even say a fine art form, of playing music and giving musicians places to play, why not do what Nashville does and what Austin, Texas does and make money off of the history and the legacy of your city?
Talking about like a Motor Row, a blues museum, that
yes.
kind of thing. Like the idea of making a district that tourism is going to come to and tax the junk out of that.
Yes, yes. Good job. No 7-second delay on
yeah.
that one. You know, that's the great irony, right, is that there's so much unmonetized space in the history of Chicago music that could be monetized, and yet you're going after pennies from these current practitioners of music making and providing.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back, and I'd love to get into the discussion about fine art, because that's where they're going, and I love that the county is going there with them. Like the lawyers, it almost feels like it's a, you know, they're just having fun with it, and the county's like, sure, you know what, let's do it, let's figure out what fine art is.
I'm so glad that there's a musicologist to help us sort this out.
I love that a musicologist. I hope the musicologist is getting paid. We're not sure. Abraham Levitan in studio. Well, we're doing Nerds on Tour here. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. This is Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Abraham Levitan. He's the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that you can find on iTunes. It's all the classics. So many classics right now.
Catch up. It's summer.
It's summer. And also Piano Power, which you're teaching children the songs they want to play on piano. I love that concept.
Yes.
When you're fully staffed.
Fully staffed. We are now accepting new students for the school year in the city or the northern suburbs. AC/DC, whatever you want to do. We come to your home.
Ooh,
that
really
is the other interesting point to make. We all do so much driving. How about taking one thing out of the equation?
My son was, I think he got interested in piano for Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, let's work that one out.
Okay. Yeah. And how long has he been playing now without playing Bad Romance?
He did one session that was what, like maybe a month and a half or whatever, you know, through the summer, Mondays and Wednesdays.
I guarantee you that if he had been with Piano Power by the end of that one session, he would have been able to play La La Ooh La La.
And he also had full makeup on.
For sure.
You'd have it all figured out. All right, we're talking about what is fine art? And the Cook County, the move, there was just a great article in The Reader about this. And it's really this amazing move by the county to really go after some clubs in Chicago that are using tax-exempt status, essentially a performance tax-exempt status for fine art, saying that rock clubs, DJs, house music, rap music, is not fine art, therefore they should not get the exemption. We don't know if this is going to stick, but it's become sort of a fun kangaroo court of now they're determining what is fine art.
Yes.
I love it.
And I guess the question is, how many people consider this a humorous argument that should play out as long as possible versus actually trying to solve a problem?
Yeah, I don't think we'll find out. Dan, you want to join the conversation? Dan, what do you think of this issue?
Well, I just wanted to add a different type of an angle to this. I just saw a blurb about it in the Trib, and I'm looking forward to reading about it in the Reader. However, this is basically how the county operates. My father built an addition to his home a number of years ago. He put in all the permits. He did everything on the up and up with the town and the county of Cook County. And the county came back and said, you owe approximately 10 years of back taxes and penalties on an increase in real estate taxes for which you did not pay. So they have people that just try to figure out how they can get back taxes on things that weren't or were not done properly.
It's a revenue generator.
It's a revenue generator. And I hate to just use this and just, but I wanted to add that comment that, you know, it does show how desperate the county and the city is for money.
Mm-hmm.
However, I believe that, yes, I'm with you that notwithstanding the argument of what fine art is, it would be devastating. It was devastating to my father to be able to come up with this money. And it's even more devastating to a business, like you said, that is running on thin margins, where my father still wanted to live there. And so he had to pay. Businesses that can't afford these back taxes
will unfortunately
have to make some very hard decisions, and probably many of them close, which ultimately will just stifle fine art. So they may win the argument and get the money if that's the way it's going to go, but it's just kind of sad to see.
Thanks for the story. That's a good point. I mean, and I think more people are going to realistically be on the side of, okay, you're just trying to use this as revenue generator. But what I love about this is it's a two multifaceted case. And we've talked about, and I think a lot of people will side on, all right, you can't really go after back taxes. You're going to break down a business who was getting tax-exempt status, you can't go back. That sounds like a scam. But what is fine art? And that, I love that the Cook County, like, they've almost walked into something that it's almost like, you know, that this is quicksand, I want out. They don't want to be, like, no government wants to be in the business of identifying what is and what's not art.
It's kind of, it has kind of a Soviet bloc quality to it.
It really does.
In my opinion, Orwellian even. So it is kind of exciting in that sense. And it's also completely ridiculous. I mean, one of the quotes from the Reader story was saying this takes us back to the 50s and, you know, watching Elvis's hips and trying to decide if this was a moral threat to the nation.
It really is. And it's funny because, okay, I guess the concept of, like, if I were going to call something fine art, right? I guess in my mind I would think of that as, like, woodwind instruments, right?
Okay.
I'm going there. So I would go to some, the idea of fine art being almost a nod to history in a way that you're performing an art form that has gone through human history that does not necessarily make money. The goal is not to be a rock star if you're in an opera or an orchestra, but your goal is to enrich the society in which you live.
Mm.
That is my definition of fine art. Yours.
So I'm going to bring up a counterexample that may or may not ring true to you, but because I have no life, I end up watching a lot of PBS, like on the weekends, mm-hmm. like Friday and Saturdays when they're doing pledge drives. I don't know if you've ever seen any of this programming.
But I have seen it.
It is like symphony orchestras, like playing rock music with opera singers, like belting out the Steve Perry parts
and all that stuff. It's a weird fusion stuff. Right.
It's out of control. And I find it so ridiculous and kind of in a way like very innocent and heartwarming. But you put an ensemble like that into this discussion.
Right.
Now, those are people that were trained to be fine artists, but have made some kind of weird left turn into a very profitable concert career.
It's almost like what you see when a cappella groups get out of the sort of college scene and they become famous and they tour and they make money. And you're like, well, that's not, I mean, that's fine art, but they're making money.
Yes, yes. And speaking,
is that really what the difference is? Like, is fine art, is money have to be brought up in this equation?
I mean,
I don't know.
I think that's the subtext. I think, you know, there are government bureaucrats, again, that assume that by dubbing yourself a rock band, you are earning a life of outrageous riches and bubble baths 24/7. And who knows what goes on in the bubble baths. But that being said, the reality of that is so different. And you compare these, like, Bafo symphony rock groups, whatever they are, who play on PBS versus an experimental act trying to make the most of a 9 o'clock night at the Empty Bottle. Which one is pushing more boundaries? I would say it's the experimental act.
That's interesting. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, what do you want to add to the conversation tonight?
Well, as I told your producer, Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, all of them, their music was pop music.
Yeah, you're right.
There were people who were appalled by what people put on the stage back then and raised all kinds of emotions about it the way people do now. And now they're classics.
Yeah, that's true. Thanks
for
that.
They're the finest of fine art.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Kathy. That is a great point. I don't know how the county got involved, though. It's really smart by the lawyers on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, you could make an argument in the present time with a Chopin, with a Bach, with a Beethoven, that the powers that be would be like, no, this is not fine art. These are rappers. These are the rappers of the time.
For sure.
And we're going to look in 100 years and be like, Kanye West is a fine artist.
Yes. And that is the ultimate joke of all of this. And thanks, Kathy. That was an awesome point. I mean, anybody who's watched the movie Amadeus in recent memory sees how Mozart was completely a rock star of his day.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this vision, this fantasy of waking up Mozart or Beethoven and bringing them into 2016 and how long it would take them to get up to speed with Skrillex and with hip hop and everything.
I really, like Bill and Ted's.
I
think they did that. Didn't they? Yeah.
I probably am ripping this off from Bill and Ted 3 or something like that. but
wow, it's Beethoven, man.
Beethoven's wearing shades. But the point being, I really don't think it would take them that long to become innovators in our current musical landscape and therefore yank themselves, as Kathy pointed out of the fine art category mm-hmm. and into this rock pop DJ category, in which case Cook County would have an issue with their artistry from that point on.
Abraham Levitan in studio. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. Let's keep talking. We got other issues to talk about. Pandora and Questlove. Also, Frank Ocean's very intriguing move to get out of his contract. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. But I feel like we can keep on this. And I know that people want to talk about it. 312-981-7200. Because I would also make the argument, doesn't the county have the right to change what a tax exemption is offered to? So if they want to say in the government statute, and they have people that will say aye, nay, aye, whatever it is, that it's opera, that it's unmiked, you know, that it's not for profits. Maybe yeah. there's something there that could play, and it's just
of,
the way the government.
Of course, they have the right, but the right of the citizenry is to make them look as ridiculous as possible for making that choice.
All right, stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. That's interesting, a little Kanye West there. I was Abraham Levitan's my guest tonight. We're Nerds on Tour, our monthly look at the music industry. Nerds on Tour, of course, also a podcast that Abraham does. You can find it on iTunes. You know, I was just looking. There was an article I read last week that said that Kanye West has surpassed Michael Jackson in the number of top 10 Billboard hits singles. Like in his career, it's like 42 or something like that. Now, obviously, you're comparing different generations, and Michael Jackson put a record out every 3 years. Kanye West and the new generation, they put every 6 hours. But the point being that it is interesting that for all of the people he you know, sort of polarizes, you know, he has become really the artist of our time.
Yeah, so the one counter argument to make there, and I'm making this as a huge Kanye fan, I will go to the mat for Kanye, is how many copies you needed to sell back then in the Michael Jackson era to make the top 10 versus now. I mean, I think it's minuscule now. I mean, there was this Paul McCartney article in Rolling Stone, this interview with him recently where he was talking about how, you know, somebody told him that a recent album of his was in the top 10 or something like that. And then he was like, oh, cool. What are the sales figures? And it was like,
a percentage of what the
tiny amount, and he was still being told to celebrate this amazing achievement of being in the top 10.
Oh, that's it. I didn't even think about that. That's interesting. Yeah, the industry has changed so much that you're not selling, but there's so much of it that yeah, you can have a minuscule number and it make it to the top 10.
Right,
there you go. And you know what? Kanye's out. He's out. Never mind, that argument's dead.
Worthless.
That's it. All right, back to the fine art conversation, 312-981-7200. You know, the one thing Dan brought up in the call was just this concept that maybe the county, this is what the county does to generate revenue at a certain time in the year where they kind of have a little back tax frenzy on all sorts of places, and maybe because the Reader covers arts and culture and the lawyers on the other side for Bruce Finkelman and others, you know, are able to get the media's attention, that's why we're talking about this. But this may be a practice that happens more often than not. But it's interesting because, okay, let's say that they do succeed and these clubs up with 750 seats have to pay the tax. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to go under, mm-hmm. but it does mean...
So I was talking to my wife this evening over a delicious lentil dish that she had made, about what ultimately happens if the clubs lose and then they have to pay this 3% tax. And her point was that they would just raise their prices by 3%. And therefore, it's the consumer that is ultimately paying this tax,
so
not the club.
Your wife makes an unbelievable point that it's almost like the county, they'll get their money, and they would much rather have the empty bottle raise their prices than for them to raise a tax.
Yes.
That's politically, you know, not possible. But, you know, if you said, oh, now the ticket at Empty Bottle is 20 instead of 15, we'd all be like, oh, man, the man. Okay, here you go. Take it off my card. But, you know, it would be passed down to us regardless.
Yeah, I mean, didn't the Cubs just go through this thing with amusement taxes and all this stuff? And, oh, sorry, everybody, we have to raise our prices. Now, I mean, the Cubs are putting out a product that people would frankly pay, you know, hundreds of dollars for, at least in its current form. Whereas, you know, a Monday night at the Empty Bottle, well, those shows are usually free, but a weeknight at the Empty Bottle, there's a legitimate difference in people who would come in for $7 and people who'd come in for $10. So, I mean, you know, in cases like that, it could be the difference between selling out a show and not selling out a show.
In your gut, as someone who has followed the music industry, do you feel that they have a point, that the artists and the club owners that are defending their tax-exempt status, do you think they have a chance to win this case, to go there philosophically with fine art and avoid the idea of paying tax?
Yeah, I absolutely feel like they have a point. I mean, fine art versus popular art is such a gauzy description to begin with that it's just not worth picking up that fight. I mean, we were talking off air about, you know, perhaps this is an argument that the county thought they could just throw in with their other little mom and pop money grabs, as the first caller was indicating, and this bubbled up into the popular consciousness in a way that they were hoping it didn't. But this is not the kind of argument that government should be legislating at all. And, you know, one of the people that was texting that you read to me was saying that even high schools don't do this kind of thing.
224 says any high school or college includes any kind of music in its fine arts department.
Any kind. And that's what the county needs to get on board with, too. I mean, this is such, you know, it is the definition of a slippery slope.
It really is. And I, you know, it's one of these classic arguments, and I feel very strongly that fine art should include it all. But I also will say, playing devil's advocate, that a house that's you know, if the county is seeing someone who's charging $20-$25 at a cover, and the place is packed, and there's a DJ, and the club promoters are getting paid, and the club's getting paid, and then when it comes tax time, they're like, hey, we're fine art. You know, we're not going to give you that 3% like everybody else. That's unfair.
Sure.
There's a fairness issue that says, hey, listen, so maybe there's a little bit of both where they're trying to go after those type of people, and who's caught in the crossfire are the people, like you said, Monday night where it's experimental free night. And, you know, that is fine art because they're enriching the community that's around them. And they're the ones that aren't going to be able to provide that if they have to pay that cat.
Yeah. And I just got to shake my head and say, it's the system, baby. This is Chicago. You learn the rules, you learn how to get around the rules, and you play the game. Now, at some point, somebody blows the whistle and says, oh, the rules are changing, and then it's your job to scream as loudly as possible and say, don't change the rules in my game. And so that's what's going on. I mean, you know, we could make this all about principle, but the reality is you start your business under the auspices of a certain set of rules and expectations. And if those rules and expectations change, you lawyer up and you make your case.
Well, I don't know enough about, I mean, obviously there's I know that the state of Illinois, and this happens in theater all the time. The state of Illinois will give you a 501c3 not-for-profit status to be a theater company. Hmm. You know, you have a mission statement, you sort of organize yourself to be a not-for-profit. And a lot of the theaters, it's pretty amazing, and you see this a lot, the Goodman Theater is a not-for-profit 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Jones was in here within the last year saying, you know, the War Paint Broadway musical, which is coming through, which just ended, or is maybe just wrapping up, was a huge success. And also in the history of Chicago, the most expensive not-for-profit theater ticket in the history of Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, so you get this idea that you're like, okay, well, you know, the state lets you be a 501c3, which says you can raise money. Abraham, you can give money to the theater. And it also gives you a tax-exempt status that you don't have to pay the tax. But how do you balance that when you're also charging Broadway prices at $225 a ticket?
Right.
And saying, well, that's, you know, that's just, that's what the going rate is.
That I mean,
is fascinating. How do you do that? So that's the same argument with the music clubs.
Right. So now you're talking about a venue by venue distinction when in reality, maybe the only way to make sense of it is to do a show by show distinction or a play by play distinction. I mean, you know, it's, I mean, that's how ridiculous it gets.
It does.
You get the empty bottle, like waving their flag saying, oh, it's Monday night, this is tax exempt,
right?
And then it's Friday night, it's not tax exempt. Oh wait, but the show didn't do very well. It only drew 75 people, even though it was a Friday night. So you know what? It's tax exempt again.
Man, it's a rabbit hole because it is. I mean, when art gets to a point where it's competitive, you know, and they're selling, you know, when Steppenwolf is selling a ticket against the Goodman, and they're both, you know, selling the hot show that they have at $185, $200 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they're not paying any tax to the city or to the county, and they're also able to raise money through, you know, you just giving them money. I mean, that's at a certain point, you're like, I thought the concept at the beginning of the day, and I'm not just singling out them because that happens all over the place, is that, you know, it's a not-for-profit, so they don't have to play that game. They don't have to, you know, we're going to give you the tax exemption so we can take a little bit off the top so you can give affordable experiences to the masses that are part of your community.
But I just got to
go. Take advantage of it.
I got to go widescreen here for a second and say that if this was Europe, this conversation would be so ridiculous. That this
There's
is
a lot of things on our art. Show that would be ridiculous.
This is art. It has nothing to do with the government putting their hands. Oh, okay. Now that I'm saying that, in Europe, the government would be doing more than trying to take money out. They would actually be funding the HECK out of all of these projects. Can I say heck on AM radio?
That's good.
And they would actually be partners with the creators instead of opposition to the creators. I mean, you know, the whole adversarial nature of how the government is perceived in Chicago in the arts community is insane. And I mean, it goes back to this idea of like, if you really want to get money from the arts community, why don't you monetize the history of Chicago blues and jazz in a way that makes some kind of sense for tourism and ongoing revenue instead of trying to penny pinch the people that are making very small incomes right now.
Abraham Levitan in studio. Nerds on Tour is his podcast. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And then let's talk Frank Ocean.
Let's do it.
I think that's the old days of the record deals, the multi-record deals, the multi-album deals, and Frank Ocean may have found a workaround. We'll talk about his big month here with Abraham.
He got out of his.
Coming up, stay with us. Abraham Levitan in studio. It's The Download, 720 WGN, Abraham's podcast, Nerds on Tour. He found on iTunes a podcast, interview podcast that covers the music industry. He's also our guest once a month here on The Download. One thing, Frank Ocean, great, I guess you call him an R&B singer at this point, right?
I'd call him a fine artist.
fine artist. Frank Ocean, he came out, I think it was last week? He came out with an album, and it was a big deal. Frank Ocean's dropping new music. This is a big deal. And then quietly, within days, he drops another one.
Yes.
He drops two. Why did Frank Ocean drop two albums in the span of 4 days?
I mean, at first, everyone just thought, this guy's so prolific, he can't be stopped. But then they started reading the credits at the bottom of these two releases and noticed that the first one said Def Jam Records, and the second one did not. It was credited to Frank Ocean's own label. So you read a little deeper into the story, and it turns out that Frank Ocean had one album left on his Def Jam contract, wisely used that final bullet to put out a big visual album, Beyonce style, and draw a lot of attention. And then within days, while he still had all this attention on him, say,
really?
Oh, here is the first release on my own.
So, okay, so let me ask you about that, because, see, he got out of his Def Jam. He did his last album on Def Jam, so now he's ready to go on his own album, and he's able to use that buzz from Def Jam. Are artists usually prolific like that, where they're able to produce that kind of music that quick? I mean, he's got, 9 songs and 18 songs at the go, ready to go, or is there something that will suffer from the quality?
I mean, I have to go back in my mind to when his last full-length Channel Orange came out, but I think it's been at least 3 years, something like that.
So he's been stockpiling.
I think he's been stockpiling, yes.
Now, is there an issue, if I were Def Jam, do you run the risk, I mean, do you have to like kind of go in there and be like, where'd you record tracks? Where's that bass? Where the bass player? Who paid that bass player? Like, I mean, is it that kind of thing where you're like, one is Def Jam, and then 4 days later, Zone. I mean, does he have to be pretty smart about making sure they're recorded and done completely separate?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm sure it's in the language of the contract somewhere as to whether Def Jam has control over the full content of every recording session or just control over the media, the actual MP3s that end up on the final release. But it does call to mind a very rich history of what rock and roll artists have done to get out of their contracts over the years.
Why do they? Because it used to be that you made it. If you got a 6-album deal from Epic Records, right? You were, oh my God, you made it. Take us through that.
Yeah. So what used to happen is that when artists were desperate to get out of their record contract, one famous example being Van Morrison, who had a certain number of songs left on his old 60s record contract and literally churned out songs of just him strumming an acoustic guitar and mumbling nonsense. One of the songs is called Ringworm, where he just mumbles for 30 seconds about having ringworm on his toes. He would do song after song, and then he would say, okay, I've fulfilled the terms of my contract, and now I'm moving on. Now, the difference in the 60s is that when you moved on, you ran straight into the arms of another record label that was going to treat you better. And now, when artists are desperate to get out of their major label contract, they run the heck out of the music industry entirely.
Yeah, and there has been, I mean, a Pearl Jam was outspoken about, they had a 7-album deal, I think it was with Epic, whoever they were on when they signed. I mean, and they were very outspoken about happy to be out of that contract. They finally did their last one this a couple of years ago. And it really is because, you know, not unlike sports and other, the pastures are ripe in the way that musicians don't want to be in record deals anymore because they realize they can make much more money without a middleman.
Yeah, and of course the biggest thing that's changed is distribution. Now that we are in the age of the web, as I like to call it, distribution has been completely solved. You can do it on your own. So all you really need labels for, in a sense, at least these big labels, is to be enormous hype machines. And once you get to a certain level of hype, why do you need the hype machine anymore if you're a Radiohead or something like that? So, I mean, Frank Ocean, you just see it starting to happen earlier and earlier into artists' careers. You know, I mean, if Frank Ocean were following the Radiohead model, he would be on a major label for another 5 or 6 albums before he pulled a stunt like this. But I think
because you can change it up.
This does set a precedent for doing it earlier.
Another big part, and maybe it's not as big anymore, but I think about radio play. This concept that the radio stations, especially Clear Channel and the FM stations, they almost were the mouthpieces or were in partnership with major record labels. Do they have any power anymore? I mean, is it like the Ariana Grandes and the Katy Perrys that they play on Kiss FM? I mean, that's because they're signed to a major label. You're not hearing radio stations play too much that's the independent variety.
Certainly not Clear Channel stations, right. I think
is that
it has
change?
I don't know. I think maybe the question to ask is, are the stakes so small now that it doesn't really matter? I mean, it goes back to the idea of Kanye having, you know, 42 top 10 singles, and maybe each of those top 10 singles sold a 10% of what Michael Jackson's top 10 singles sold. I mean, with Frank Ocean, I think part of him is probably saying, okay, so I don't get played on the radio and I sell 80% of what I would sell if I were on a major label, who cares? What that other 20% is such a small number now because all the numbers are getting so small that I might as well take 100% of that pie.
Right.
You know, instead of taking...
It's so interesting. It's interesting to me because it really is the... you know, we keep talking about the death of the music industry, but until all artists are playing this way, they're in this weird kind of purgatory where it's 50-50, where you still have the Ariana Grandes and you still have the Britney Spears and the others who are playing the major industry role, and so they get fed into the Clear Channel stations. But then you have the Kanye Wests and the Chance the Rappers and others who aren't, but are making money.
And if you really want to take it back, let's go back to Ani DiFranco in the 90s. Because she got out of that game or was never in that game. And her argument was always in part a financial one. I mean, she was always saying, look, I'm selling a tiny fraction of what these popular artists are selling, but arguably I'm making just as much money as they are because I keep 100% of it.
Absolutely. The idea being that agents and managers and marketing people are all taking your money. It's at the same time, Britney Spears is getting the same kind of money as Chance the Rapper at the end of the day.
Yes.
That's really interesting to think about. Abraham, great to have you here. Good hour.
Great to have you, Justin.
Abraham Levitan, you can check out his podcast, Nerds on Tour, on iTunes. Also,
Piano Power.
What's the website?
PianoPower.org.
Good job.
Let's sign up for back-to-school music lessons tonight.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Wrigley is the place for fun and sun. Wiggling in Sheffield for Cubs home run. Ernie is smiling from up above, saying, let's win too. Cubs are in the swing of things.
Very trippy on the... it's got like a Jefferson Airplane meets... the guy who did Bad to the Bone.
I don't know. George Thorogood?
Yeah, George Thorogood. George Matt Thorogood? Klein in studio. Yeah. Hey, you know why he's here? Because it's time for Picnic. This, of course, our weekly segment where we give legitimate, authentic names to the 2016 Chicago Cubs, a team of destiny that has earned, with 81 wins already, has earned nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just have this team be a team of destiny, win the World Series, and then be like, I guess we'll call you K-Bry. You can't do that. That's you know what that is? That's a disservice to this team, and it's laziness on our end as fans. So tonight, we get close to the end here. We've been doing this all summer long. Pete read the list last week. Maybe we'll read it again tonight at the end. We are running out of players. We're down to almost single digits. It's a couple that's going to get a little off when it comes down to the September call-ups. But tonight, utility infielder, I guess utility outfielder, Matt Caesar. And also middle relief, I guess you could almost say spot starter.
Yeah, he hasn't had one this year. He actually hasn't started one game. But yes, you can call him. He's pretty much a full-fledged reliever now.
Travis Wood. So Matt Caesar and Travis Wood, we need nicknames for both these guys. 312-981-7200. The winners tonight are going to get a Pequod's Pizza gift card. Matt Klein, what do we know about Matt Caesar?
Matt Caesar is number 20 in your programs, number one in your heart. Utility outfielder, born on July 20th, 1989. And it says, both sites I looked at says he was born in the Cape May Courthouse in New Jersey. Okay. I don't know why they make it a point to make that his place of birth, not just the town,
like,
Cape May.
Like, was it
May.
Some weird story where it, he was, like, born in the, it, like, it was like, oh,
no,
my God,
there's,
I'm pregnant.
There's, like, no backstory. It's just both things that you look at says he was born in the Cape May Courthouse in New Jersey. Huh. He's played from 2014 to the present day on the Chicago Cubs.
Has he played anywhere else before the Cubs, or was he
Cubs only?
Really?
Cubs only, yeah. He's currently this season, let's see, 150 at-bats. He's batting .287 with 5 homers and 22 RBIs. Also, what I like to say is pretty much the same output as Hayward has in 418 at-bats.
Right. Well, he's been getting more and more starts, Matt Caesar, because of the injuries, but also because Jason Hayward's been.
And he sees a lot of late inning work defensively.
Okay.
Whenever if we get a pitching change through 6 innings, there's a lot of times he's the guy that comes in during the double shift. So let's see. He also went to the Lower Cape May Regional High School, mascot the Tigers. I also thought there was something kind of cool. He played
wide receiver, running back, and Wildcat quarterback, and was a return specialist on the Villanova Wildcat football team.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't even realize that Villanova wasn't in, like, the major, like, football conference. Like, no. They won the football subconference national championship, and he was the MVP of the game.
Wow. Well, I would assume if he's playing 19 different positions.
When he's got seven positions, yeah, he might win the MVP
also,
of the game.
Also, what's weird, didn't Nova win the NCAA tournament this year? Like, was that – am I
– Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? NCAA basketball, yeah.
Yeah, so in football, they don't even register as a –
Yeah, it's weird how that works one, yeah. sometimes. Yeah, it's like there's like a couple hundred basketball schools, and then there's like 117 football schools. Yeah. Like, they don't all are in the same thing.
Pete Zimmerman, what do you like? I mean, what do you like or what do you know about Matt Caesar? Anecdotally, what's a Matt Caesar mean to you?
Other than his really weirdly spelled name.
Yeah, he's got an S-C-Z.
Yeah, S-Z-C-Z. You are.
Hmm.
So when he came up, I remember, you know, there was a lot of hilarious pronunciations like of his Scherzer.
Right.
But Leighton, I'm going to double up here on Matt, though. Yeah, the guy was a tremendous football player, tremendous athlete. He's an amazing fielder. A solid utility guy.
And the pronunciation is Caesar.
It's Caesar.
Like, all hail Caesar.
Yeah.
As Martyr said.
Six
okay.
letters. And five are consonants, so it's
okay. Why don't we start with you, Matt? What do you think? Would give us a Matt Caesar?
Nickname wise, I don't have much. I was hoping that you could give me something.
All right, I'll go with the.
Let's see what the textures are running with right
okay,
now.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, so for Caesar, 705. He's got maybe a winner right off the bat. Nickname should be spell check. Someone's got to buy him a vowel for Christmas. Come on.
Spell check. Brilliant.
630 says for Matt Caesar, how about Romero? Caesar Romero.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No, that's not bad at all.
That's not bad at all.
Romero.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay, so Caesar obviously is going to play a big role here. And I'm trying to think because it's so funny. Caesar, I want to say, just like the Roman guy Caesar. That's all I've come up with so far. Like, Caesar was an emperor. Was he an emperor? No, he wasn't. He was Caesar.
He was Julius Caesar.
He's a Caesar. Yeah. So that's what makes it so hard.
Beware the Ides of March.
Yeah, right. You know, like, Ides of March, maybe?
The Slides of March, spring chaining. Like, there are certain things I'm looking at the utility aspect. I know we've been trying to do utility with like flex and stuff like that with other guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything, you know, Villanova Wildcats, Lower Cape May Regional High School, the longest high school title name in the
That's
world.
A weird high school.
Tigers.
Let's try Glenn. Glenn, what do you got for Matt Caesar?
I was thinking Matt the Trophy Caesar.
Trophy.
You know, kind of like the trophy. You know, if it's with his scholastic, not his scholastic, but his athletic.
Because he could play a lot, and he was MVP in that game, right?
Achievement awards, yeah. With a little play on his last name.
Yeah, right, Caesar, like he seizes the trophy.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, Glenn, thanks for that. Thank you for that. That's not bad.
The Caesar.
630 says Matt the Law Caesar, born in a courthouse. 847, same with Martyr, Hail.
The judge.
Hail. For Hail Caesar.
Hail Caesar.
So yeah. Whatever you call him, Hail.
Okay.
Come on, Hail.
Come on, Hail.
And it doesn't really feel.
It doesn't feel.
262 as the crouton kid. I'm not sure what that's. Caesar salad. That's beautiful. Oh, man. Croutons. What if you shorten it to croutons?
Just crouton. I love crouton.
Crouton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The big crouton.
847 goes with the bailiff. The born in the courthouse. They really like the born in the courthouse.
Good.
But see, that's one of those ones you got to work on the backstory because you're like,
right.
Let's go bailiff. Well, what do you call him bailiff? Oh, we'll see. When he was born, he was born in a courthouse. We think. We're not sure. In two different sources. Like it just loses its. All right,
we call him spell check because there's five consonants, only one vowel.
All right. Stay on the line if you're on the line, Jeff. Others, 312-981-7200. We'll take a real quick break. We'll come back with Picnic. Stay with us.
What a beautiful day. Ball game. Cubs are on their way. Hey, Ernie, let's play two. We'll raise the W, because the Cubbies won today. Raise your voice, stand up and cheer, because this is gonna be our year. Holy cow! We're going all the way. We're cheering on the Cubbies.
It's a download here on WGN, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, it's Picnic. Matt Klein's here. Pete Zimmerman's here. Rob Martier's here. Esmeralda Leon's here. We are picking nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, utility outfielder, fourth outfielder, Matt Caesar, and middle reliever, Travis Wood. We haven't got to Wood. We will in a second. Let's continue with Matt Caesar since we're getting a lot of good responses on that. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, what do you like? What do you like for Matt Caesar?
What do you think of Salad Man?
Salad Man. He could have a lot of endorsements that way. He could be like always hold like the salad tongs.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, well, for all his positions, salads normally have a lot of things in them.
Yeah, right. There you go. Like, yeah. Like a junk
Caesar salad.
Caesar's
pretty simple, so it might conflict a little bit. But
that's good. Caesar salad. Like, I do like just straight up like formally calling him Caesar salad.
Right.
Let's go Caesar salad.
Okay.
Or just salad.
Yeah, salad. The salad man. All right. Thanks, man. Jeff. That's good. All right. Thanks.
Have a good night.
I still like the crouton, too.
Crouton.
That was pretty good.
Let's go crouton. Let's go Parmesan cheese. dissect a
I was trying to think of a play on like a chicken Caesar. But
right, chicken Caesar.
Yeah, but like
Matt Chicken Caesar.
Chicken
but chicken's a negative, like chicken is
right, right. It doesn't play well. But
630 says for Matt, how about Inspector Gadget? I guess.
Utility type comment.
Yeah. 773 says Ogles because Matt sees her.
Matt Ogles?
Ogles.
Ogles.
I like that. That's good.
Sees her.
Also, All Hail is too obvious a choice. So saying, ooh, going after Martyr's choice.
Uh-oh, all hail.
No, yeah. 773 says, just FYI, that's a Polish name, and regrettably, the name means rat.
Ooh.
I did not know that. Hmm. Well, he's gone. Okay. He's gone this far. He's doing okay. Nicknamed Judge Dredd, like the movie says, Judge, Jury, Executioner. Yeah, the movie does say that. That is something that the movie says. How about Pan Pan after Little Caesars? Pan Pan. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And then 630's got the Neutron crouton.
Crazy Bread.
Crazy
Bread. Well, I'm writing Crazy Bread down. I like that one.
A lot of good stuff tonight on Matt Caesar. Anchovies go in Caesar salad, so call him Fish Man. Another one said the Big Anchovy.
Are there anchovies on a Caesar salad?
I
guess you could really put anything on it.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I guess that's a thing. All right. Wow. That is a list. We'll come back. If you got some more for Matt Caesar, bring him 312-981-7200. Travis Wood. Matt Klein, what do we think of Travis Wood?
Well, Travis Wood is jersey number 37. He's a relief pitcher. He's born on February 6, 1987. He's 29 years old.
Wow, 29.
I actually thought he was older, too.
I thought he was younger.
Well, okay.
He's a reclamation project, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
He was a prospect coming out of the Reds organization.
He played for the Reds. He pitched for the Reds for 2 years. It was during that stretch where Theo wanted to bring in, you know, the guy that we traded for Arrieta. Anyway, I can't remember his name. And a bunch of other guys of that ilk that he would bring in on 1 or 2 year deals.
Yeah, it was a lot of guys that were highly touted.
Right.
Came out, couldn't get it done wherever they were at. And
exactly.
Jake Arrieta being one of
Chris
them.
Chris Volstad was one of them. God, it's killing me, the guy that we traded for Arrieta. But
Arrieta was one.
But well,
I mean, he was brought in like that because he started in Baltimore and he couldn't figure it out.
He wasn't doing well.
Yeah, and they said, okay, we'll take a shot on this guy.
It was right. It was trading. It was essentially trading a reclamation for a reclamation.
And Travis Wood, if I'm not mistaken, was a highly touted prospect. He was one of these guys coming out of the Reds organization that was like, well, this is going to be our future starter. And he never kind of figured it out. And they quickly kind of gave up on him.
Right. Well, and he's also was one of those guys. I mean, listen, all these kids destroy it in high school. There's nothing more absurd than high school baseball numbers. For the guys that make the big leagues.
Right.
In his senior year, he batted like .774 with 70 home runs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
But he was a two-time Arkansas Gatorade Player of the Year.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's – but I think the big story with Travis Wood, the main thing is that this guy was – we – even after last year, 2015, a very good year for the Cubs, 97 wins, trip to the NLCS. He made 9 starts earlier in the year, and then they made the decision that, you know what, this guy might be better off in the bullpen. And he went down to the pen – pitched 45 games in relief and had a 2.95 ERA.
And
did his
big,
best work of the season by far.
Wasn't his big story, and either it was right before the playoffs or the playoffs, didn't he start a game or was a long reliever in a game?
He did, yeah. And he
they were doing that at the end of the year, Joe Maddon.
And it's, you'll see it this year, too. Yeah. Actually, Montgomery is starting in this Dodgers series again. And some of that has to do with the fact that Lackey's injured,
but he does that where he only throws like a bullpen like four innings, right?
Exactly. He'll have and I think you'll see that in September, especially when we expand to the 40-man rosters. He'll have days to give his starters rest, especially now. I mean, we're gonna have 90 wins come September 1st.
What do you got on Travis Wood?
Travis Wood, also a tremendous left fielder. We should mention
that's right.
He's come in a few times, or twice, I think, where he's gone in the outfield because Joe Maddon's kind of doing his matchups, mm-hmm. lefty-righty matchups.
Right.
He go out in the outfield, play left field for a couple batters, and come in to face another batter. And then that Sunday night game where they came back and beat Seattle, he made a huge catch out there and left.
All right. Let's see. 7 okay, let's go. Travis Oaktree 773 says Oaktree for Travis Wood. It's gonna be a lot of wood. Let's try to keep it. I've already started to censor a little bit here. A lot of
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
262 the log splitter. Right?
Okay.
That could work. Back to Caesar, we've got the salad shooter. That's not bad. There's a lot of salad.
I would imagine.
708 says, how about pizza?
If you're going to go pizza, you have to go crazy bread.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Matt the Griller Caesar. Well, the Griller. I guess that doesn't really work.
No. Actually makes no sense whatsoever.
708 says, I don't have name picks, just an FYI, Caesar dressing when made from scratch is made from anchovy paste.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. So, how about how about Saul Minow? For a take on, okay.
What?
What? They're saying take on salad anchovies. Like minnows, salad, sal minnows. That's really.
I like that way more than I should, but that's pretty good.
Okay, here's a good one. 224. I like this. Listen to this. You guys would like this one. Travis Woods, number 37.
Correct.
3 plus 7 equals 10. Born in 87 equals 15. Right? So you got 10 and 8 plus 7, 15. Police signal 10-15 is a police call for civil disturbance. So let's call them the Riot Act. Wow. That's a Martyr special. Right?
Research alone.
I was going to say, I'm impressed with that. That's going deep.
That's good.
Well done.
That is well done. Again, though, you're going to have a lot of math. You're going to have to show your math when you're at the game and you're like, come on, Riot Act. Why Riot Act? Well, okay. So he's number 37. 3 plus 7 equals 10, right?
Do you have to use the bathroom? Because I would go before I would explain why I'm going to call him the Riot Act.
Travis Wood, 630, they call him the Lumberjack.
Okay. Yeah, big, a lot of plays on the wood.
219 says Travis Wood, taxi driver. It's Travis Bickle.
How about flannel?
Ooh, yeah. Flannel
for Travis Wood.
Flannel. I like that. The Axe, 630 likes the Axe. Let's try Carol. Carol, what do you got, Carol? What do you like for Travis Wood?
I've got Woody Woodpecker.
That's great. And you could play that, you know, when he comes out of the bullpen, right?
Exactly.
Actually, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the laugh. All you play is the Woody Woodpecker laugh.
Yeah, get the whole crowd going.
Yeah. It's got potential. I like that, Carol. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, John, you got one for Matt Caesar. What do you got for Matt Caesar?
I like Augustus. I think he had a better rep than Julius, and it's somewhat majestic. And
I like it. I like that a lot.
It's short and sweet.
I like that you're going for the other Caesar. Always strong. I appreciate that. Thanks, John. All right. So a lot of good stuff coming in here. All right, let's take a break. We'll get the news. We'll come back and we'll do some more with Picnic, Travis Wood, and Matt Caesar tonight. Stay with us. Run away, yeah, with me. This is Matt Caesar's walk-up song. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Caesar! They go right to the chorus, though, like when they're like, Matt Caesar! And then it goes, okay. You know, that's how it works. All right, Rob Martyr, we're playing Picnic tonight. Let's go to the guru, Mr. Martyr. Matt Caesar, what are you thinking for Matt Caesar?
Look, Caesar's one of these guys who was just a great all-around athlete, went to Villanova, played football there as well, wide receiver, running back, little quarterback, but was a return specialist.
Ooh.
So why don't we just simply call him Matt the Specialist Caesar?
The Specialist. Mm.
The Specialist.
Sounds like a Gary Oldman movie. I don't know if that's really a Gary Oldman movie, but it does, doesn't it?
Movie called The Specialist.
Is he in it?
Yeah.
No,
it's Stallone and Sharon Stone.
All right. Well, it was close. Yeah. All right. Anything for Travis Wood?
I don't know, man. I'm having a tough time with that one.
Well, let's go to the texters because they've got.
I'll think about it.
Yeah. For 708 says for Travis Wood, Walking Tall.
Hmm. The Specialist also had 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
If Gary Oldman was in it, it would have been
certified fresh had he been in it.
All right. Travis Cooter Wood. Cooter was the best character on Dukes of Hazzard. Okay.
All right. Cooter. Cooter!
The Craftsman. 312 goes with The Craftsman. Crafts different pitches for left and right-handed batters.
He does, actually.
And it's a reference to a woodcrafter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that.
The Craftsman. I actually like that one a lot. He does have a lot of pitches. He might have the largest repertoire.
So we can call him the Arsenal.
And the Arsenal? Yeah. Ooh, I like that one, too. I mean, he's got every fastball and every, off-speed pitch. I mean, he's got them all.
815 says, just like Buffalo Wild Wings... You know, they call it B-dubs. We should call Travis Wood T-dubs.
Yeah, that's what we've always wanted to shy away from. Right. Yeah.
All right. I said the lumberjack, right?
You know what Matt Caesar would be if we tried to do it that way? Okay. Matt Szk. Or M-Szk.
Come on, M-Szk. How about an M-Swizzle? You know?
M-Swizzy?
M-Swizzle. Yeah. 847 says, how about Matt the Rat?
M-Szy?
M-Szy, right? M-C... There's something there. MC, MC's.
Ooh, MC. Okay, hold
MC's.
On.
MC's. 708 says for Travis Wood, how about Tiger? Like Tiger Wood?
Tiger Wood, yeah.
Okay.
He went to Bryant High School in Little Rock, where they were the Hornets, too, if anybody wants to do anything with a Hornet.
705 says, for Travis Wood, how about Big Birch? That's good. That's a tree.
That's a tree, right, yeah. The Dutch Elm.
Play on wood and Big Bird.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they said. That's good. 815 says Travis Cottage Cheese Wood. I don't know what that... I don't know.
No clue where they're going there. Yeah.
Travis Chainsaw. How about Chainsaw? Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, that could be applicable to a pitcher.
Like a wood?
Sure, yeah.
Wood, yeah.
Cutting down wood.
Cutting down, yeah. Speaking of Gary Oldman, The Professional... It's the movie that...
Is that what you were thinking of?
No, but that's what they're telling me I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
No. I know what The Professional is. It's a great movie. I like The Specialist, though.
I do, too, actually. That just seems like a
Gary Oldman. Okay. Let's see. I'm still going down. 312-981-7200. All right. Let me see what we got here coming in. For Travis Wood, how about 38 Special? Mm. Okay.
Well, his number's
like
37.
The band? Yeah, right. Like a hold on, loose, don't let go. That's 38 Special. Because is that like a gun kind of thing? For Matt Caesar, how about Little Ute for utility?
Okay. The Ute. Two Utes. That plays on the courtroom thing as well,
38 Special because he looks like he should be in 38 Special, the band.
Mm. Okay. The Witness. The judge, court,
yeah, right.
court play, the court reporter.
So many good things. All right, so let's go back to
the clerk.
The clerk. Oh, that's so good. All right.
What do we? You know what? I forgot to write down. Somebody
Matt
had,
Caesar.
Somebody had Bailiff. Bailiff was good.
Bailiff was good. Matt Caesar has 214 says Empire for the Roman Empire. We call him Empire.
Mm, okay.
630 the Wood Chipper. So you could call him Chipper. Chipper Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Wood Chipper. Hmm. Okay.
Wood. Good Wood. Natalie
I'm
Wood.
You know, I feel like.
James Wood.
You know, there's some really good stuff for Matt Caesar. And Caesar's name is spelled S-Z-C-Z-U-R, right?
Right.
And everyone isn't sure specifically on how to pronounce his name.
Right.
So it feels to me, it feels right that if we're going to a nickname for Matt Caesar, that you would want something that would highlight the fact that his last name is pronounced Caesar. So that's why Hail or All Hail or
right.
Empire. Because then you're like, then anyone who's in the doubt would be like, oh, it's Caesar.
Got right.
You know
oh, that's
what, I mean?
What, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that's
why
the salad stuff
It was
might
part
work.
Of that thing where we had like Caesar and Arismendi Alcantara coming up at the same right. time. And it was just like a nightmare for Len Casper.
Travis Sawzall? Sawzall? Oh, Sawzall.
Sawzall.
Like the saws like wood.
Okay.
Yeah. I heard Jim DeShays today say Sandeasy. Is that what he
Sandeasy.
Said?
Sandeasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For San Diego?
Yeah, he did.
What is
yeah.
that?
I don't know. I don't know if he's like looked in the mirror and said, I don't have enough street cred or whatever right now. But
great night. Great day here in Sandeasy.
Sandeasy. And he absolutely said yeah. Sandeasy. Peter sent me a text like immediately afterwards. And he's like, do we really need Jim DeShays be calling San Diego Sandeasy?
Yeah. And Deasy. Matt Klein, Pete Zimmerman, Rob Martier, we're all going to take a break. We come back. Esmeralda Leon's going to pick the winner today, tonight, on Picnic for Matt Caesar and Travis Wood. 312-981-7200. If you want to get in before the deadline, because we're giving away a gift card to Pequod Pizza for the winner tonight. So stay with us.
Well, the Cubs are playing hot as they storm the field. The bats are smacking early and they will not yield. We got amazing arms and a solid D2. Get used to hearing teams are fearing the Chicago Cubs are blue in the morning. The Chicago Cubs win in the afternoon. The Chicago Cubs win in the evening. The Chicago Cubs, when the game is over, gonna raise the dubs. At the Wrigley Field, got a close one.
Come on, man. Where do you find this stuff? We're gonna raise the dubs. Did I ever tell you about the time, I think I have, where I actually went as far as to make a iPhone app that we thought was going to make us rich. We're going to, for 99 cents, we were going to, just did the W, the blue W. It was just a blue W. And I think it was called W, like the app. And the idea is that it was, we even made it and did the whole thing. I went through it. It's just a fun project I have with a couple tech friends of mine. And it would glow, like when it won, it would be like the W and it would glow like you could put your phone up. And we submitted it to Apple and it came back. Lawyers from MLB came back and said, that's a trademark.
Really?
That's a Major League Baseball
the Cubs
trademark.
W.
The W.
Oh, I'm sure they're, like, of course they got all over it. Yeah.
I know, but I'm like, come on, really?
Right.
Okay, it's a W.
Hmm? White flag, like, blue yeah. W.
So then we're like, well, what if we change the colors? And then we just got bored with it.
Yeah, right. You probably didn't even finish that exact sentence. What if we change? Did you see The Bachelor last night?
Exactly. Yeah. Matt Klein in studio. We're doing a Picnic tonight. Matt Caesar and Travis Wood. Let me go through. I got a couple more right before we get to.
Did we
Esmeralda.
Do the lumberjack?
Yeah, we got lumberjack here.
I'm seeing here that a logger that's employed in driving logs down a river could be called a river pig. A caddy man, a river hog, or a river rat. But the rat, that's Caesar. Caesar. Never mind.
708 says a rail splitter. Rail splitter for Travis Wood. Matt Caesar, how about CZ? CZ?
MCZ, I think, would be the play.
MCZ.
Yeah.
MCZ. That's not bad. We have an 630 says Lil Woody and Mick Lil Bear.
Wait, Mick Little Bear?
Mick Little Bear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Who is that? Wait, which one is that even applied
to? I don't
know. Mick Little Bear.
How are you not going to mention mine for Travis? It's the best one. Rolades.
Reliever.
Yeah, but that isn't that Raleigh Fingers? Wasn't Rolaids?
Not only that, but also last week we used ChapStick in kind of like a relief product.
Yeah, right.
Type thing.
Right.
So
but yeah, Rolaids is a well-known kind of so the Rolaids relief of the week, like a Mel Allen.
Right.
Was it Mel Allen?
I mean, there's anything can relieve things. Metamucil relieves stuff. You know what I mean? Like
312. Hey, this is more of a question for you, Esmeralda.
All right.
It's so dumb. You ready for it? Esmeralda jumped out of a plane last weekend. Did she like it?
Nope. That wasn't me. Nope. Not at all. Not in the least.
Oh, you traffic
women. Not me.
It's funny.
Completely not me.
I know.
Different times, like daytime.
Would you have
nighttime.
Ever done that?
Oh.
If they said, you know what, Esmeralda, we want you to jump out of this plane for the Air and Water Show, would you do it?
Oh. Maybe. Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah, right? So next year. the inside joke there. Okay. Ratso for Matt Caesar. The Axeman for Travis Wood. Splitter. For Travis Wood. Donation Station for Matt Caesar. I don't know. The Chisel for Travis Wood. All right. Epilepsy for Matt Caesar. Seizure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Seize the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seize and desist.
There's a lot of, yes. Yeah, there's a lot of that. Season. Travis Sickle. Are you talking to me?
Right. Oh yeah.
Slicing
okay.
Slicing down hitters. And then 630 will end it with MC Little Bear. Again.
Rat.
All
rat
right.
Pack.
Okay.
Rat Jack for a Caesar home run.
It's a Rat Jack.
Was that another Rat Jack for Matt Caesar?
What's Master Splitter? See where Splinter.
Oh,
Master
okay.
Splinter.
Master Splinter.
All right. Let me go through. Here we go. All right. So we'll do one for Klein. We'll get you Pete. Get you, and then we'll go to Esmeralda. Okay, for Matt Caesar, I've got spell check. I've got crouton. That's good. I've got the specialist. I've got MCZ. MCZ. Sorry about that. And then we'll end with the salad man. What should we like? Spell check, crouton, salad man, the specialist, or MCZ?
As I'm prone to do, I'm going to throw one more in there. Okay. I do like crazy bread a lot.
Crazy bread? Okay, and crazy bread.
Crazy bread would be my vote, but if we were to go with your five, I would say, I mean, spell check. Spell check's great, but it's kind of like a, you know, like you said, it's the 9-minute explanation while you're sitting there at the game.
Yeah.
So crouton.
Crouton.
Would probably be, if I couldn't have crazy bread, I would probably say crouton.
Crouton's a good nickname.
Yeah.
All right. How about for Travis Wood? Do we like 30, I'm going to skip that. Oak tree, flannel, Woody Woodpecker, the craftsman, or chainsaw? Oak tree, flannel, Woody Woodpecker, the craftsman, or chainsaw?
The craftsman, I think, only because it just speaks to his ability to, you know, his very good command of really all fastballs and off-speed pitches.
Okay, all right. Pete Zimmerman, do you like spell check, crouton, salad man, the specialist, or MCZ for Matt Caesar?
I'm going to second Matt again, and I'm going to go with the craftsman for Wood, and I like crouton, but I like the complete the crouton kid. I like because that, like, you know, that's, you know, the say hey kid, the comeback kid.
The crouton,
it's not
a crouton,
you know,
kid.
You know, yeah. I like that.
All right. And you like the craftsman. All right. Esmeralda Leon, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. All right. Are you ready for this? Are you excited?
I am. You're very much so.
All right. Here we go. For Matt Caesar. Matt Caesar, a utility outfielder for the Chicago Cubs. We have spell check, crouton, or the crouton kid. Or the specialist. So spell check, crouton, or the specialist.
I think I have to go with everybody.
You're going with crouton?
The crouton, yeah.
Crouton, I like that too. And I think you could also call him the crouton kid.
Would they give out croutons?
That's, you know, I
we
think
throw
that's,
croutons
throw
on
them,
the field.
You throw them on the
oh
field.
Oh my God. Let's,
oh, so
oh,
many
if
pigeons.
If this starts. Well, that's fine. Well, listen, there's going to be all of the, well, those aren't pigeons. What are those things? Seagulls that take over Wrigley at certain afternoons.
The rats of the sea?
Dude, the rats of the sea.
That might go a little wrong. Maybe they shouldn't throw croutons onto the field.
They do it for hockey. They throw stuff on the ice.
What if we called them the rat of the sea?
You just throw the croutons out there.
Like the old Henry bars back when Henry Blanco was playing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, good. All right. So Esmeralda, we got crouton. For Travis Wood, do we like Woody Woodpecker, the Craftsman, or Chainsaw? For Travis Wood. Travis Wood is a middle reliever for the Chicago Cubs. Do we like Woody Woodpecker, the Craftsman, or Chainsaw?
I'm going to go Craftsman.
All right, there it is.
Yeah, you can do something with Sears.
Yeah. There you go. There's a lot you could do there. Middle relief when you're not good enough to start.
We call him Roebuck.
You're not good enough to start, and you're just eating up innings. Sears. Sears. All right, so that's good. We got it. We got the Craftsman. We got crouton. I feel like we got it. This is a strong week.
The crouton is great.
That is great. We got two good ones tonight. Thank you, Esmeralda. Okay, so next week we're off. We'll come back after Labor Day. We really only got three more weeks before the playoffs, and we got these done before the playoffs. So we've got Jake Arrieta, Anthony Rizzo, and the September call-ups. That's what's left for Picnic. Matt Klein, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
That's going to do it for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up next with Pretty Late. Patty Vasquez. Coming up tomorrow on the program, my guest at the big table in studio, Wayne Messmer. Talk to him about his illustrious career here in Chicago. Oh, I know, right?
I love him.
He's great. From singing the national anthem to calling games to being the PA announcer. I mean, he's done everything in Chicago, and he has such a tremendous story for so many different teams. He's also a motivational speaker, so talk with Wayne Messmer tomorrow.
When he would step out onto that Canadian Club loft at the stadium, mm-hmm. I still get goosebumps just thinking about it. Guy's awesome.
It's awesome, yeah. How about it? All right.
That'll be fun.
That will be fun. I think we'll reserve 15, 20 minutes for some Martyr stories.
Well, you know what? A real, real quick one. My stepmother ran into him at a Starbucks. Long story short, he gave us tickets to go see a Chicago Wolves game.
Wow, there you go, see?
There you go.
Yeah, that's great, man. See? That was kind of like, oh, that's Martyr's probably got a lot of stories. And then he comes up with a great one like that. That's how he does. Also tomorrow, the comic duo Garfunkel and Oates will be with us. Interesting sort of folk comedy duo, two women from L.A., one of them is on the show Another Period, which is on Comedy Central. The other, Kate Micucci, is in the new Mike Birbiglia movie, Don't Think Twice. And they're all over, and you'd recognize them. They're coming to City Winery next week, so we will talk with them tomorrow on the program. That's right. So that's all coming up tomorrow and then Friday, and then it's vacation time for us.